I just said to Andy, if I carry what I was maybe 10 feet away from him, behind him and looking off the cliff face, and then seeing another sort of like maybe 30 or 40 feet down, I could see more snow beyond like my own vision, right? So I thought if I carried speed, I could land in that snow further on, the snow that I can see. But I thought I'll use Andy's eyes because he's at the cliff face. I was just like, you know, Andy, if I like carry the speed I have from this point here.
What do you mean? You yell at him?
Yeah. And so he's like, you know, side on to the cliff and kind of like assessing it and, you know.
So you're way up, like, hey, can I make that jump?
Yeah. Hey, Andy, if I carry the speed from here to the face and like, and launch it, what will happen? Like, do I have a landing, right? You quite often will ask that in snowboarding or backcountry. Do I got a landing there, man? You know, and or they'll design the, you know, they'll describe the area that you're likely to impact. And he just like looked at me really frankly, just said, you'll die. Don't do that. You will die.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Man, it doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought me some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm back from 2 weeks off. Sorry about that, but I was editing my special. Is that in my special? Does it look amazing? Come on. Obviously it does. Okay, here's the deal, you guys. It's December, which means snow. I'm right now sitting in an airport, which is why I'm not that loud, staring at a bunch of snow pouring down on a layover. Back from LA to New York. December means one thing. It means snow, it means cold, and it means skiing, you guys. And also for young punks out there, it means snowboarding. So I figured I'd get Craig Campbell back in the podcast. I had him on. This was in Scotland in August, but I figured I'd save it till December. Till his time that everyone can enjoy it. So let's talk about some snowboarding. Shredding the gnar. Butter the mashed potatoes. Let's cut off the corduroy, you guys. Feast on some fresh tracks. First tracks, get sick, get rad. Drop in, tuck in, pop out. Get air, stick it, rip it, get red. As long as it's gnarly, it'll work, says Ryan Mervis. Oh, they have such weird lingo. Those snowboarders, they have such weird lingo, and the outfits are ridiculous. There's been a big war for a long time, at least in my mind, between skiers and snowboarders. Obviously, I'm a skier. I'm not a punk. Not a punk with no respect for my elders. But I finally decided to let go of my anger towards snowboarders. They're fine. They're cool. I wish I could snowboard. I just need a few weeks. I'm not going to take an entire, if I go skiing, what, once a year, maybe twice, 2 or 3 days at a time, I'm not going to ruin a whole trip to learn snowboarding. If I was somewhere for a month, I could learn it, but not just for like, that's my entire trip. I don't know if I'm going to be able to ski at all this year. It's going to be really lame if I can't. I'll find a place. I got to do it. Yeah, I got to do it. East Coast sucks. Anyway, so I had Craig Campbell on. Craig Campbell, you might remember from Shroomfest 2015 podcast. Craig Campbell is fucking crazy. I met him again in Scotland this year in August. Saved this podcast till now because it goes with December. I was like, I'll wait till December, till the ski season's on. Craig just had a kid, you guys. Congratulations, Craig Campbell, for having a child. Way to breed, motherfucker. Way to breed. He's part of this Snowden comedy tour where they all go skiing. A bunch of guys. Who is it? Campbell, Pete Zedlecher, Paul Meyerhog, I know him. Dan Quinn, I know him. Arge Barker, Damon Cherter. I don't know some of these guys, but I know some of them. And they do a ski trip all the way through Canada. Prince Rupert, Terrace, Smithers, Quesno, Port Alberni. I don't know any of these places. Whistler. I didn't know that. That's where I broke my ankle last year. Kamloops. Oh, I got to go to Kamloops. Revelstoke. Fuck, they're just going to cool places. So they do a comedy show, Kelowna, Vancouver, February 11th, the day before my birthday. They do comedy shows and they go snowboarding all day. And that pays for the comedy shows pay for their snowboarding and stuff. So go check them out. You can go to snowedincomedytour.com for all their tickets. I used to ski when I was little. I guess that's my first my parents, we used to have a lot of money, and then we lost it all. But yeah, we'd go skiing every year in the Rocky Mountains. No, not the Rocky Mountains. Sugarloaf Mountain in North Carolina, the Appalachians, North Carolina Tennessee border. I was like one of those 3 year olds who couldn't get hurt. And I just had it in me for a long time. We'd go skiing every year, and I went all the way through my dad. We'd just go skiing on Christmas. We're on the East Coast. Now it's different because everyone's lost religion. But back then, people were still religious. They still wanted to do family stuff. So my dad would take us to Vermont, to places like that, to go skiing. And it was just us and the Asians. Slopes were empty. Just a few Jews and a few Asians. Now it's packed. At least it is in LA. Nobody gives a fuck about Christmas. It used to be me and my friend Jeff Danis on Christmas went to a movie every Christmas, and then it started getting more and more full in LA, more and more full as more and more people were like, "Fuck this family shit." It's really annoying. I mean, you know, I'm all for you guys getting over it, but don't ruin my day. We're in the last stages of this not happening, you guys. I think we got 3 weeks left, maybe four, but I think three. Thursday nights at midnight on Comedy Central, 11 p.m. Thursday nights Central Time. Check it out. You can also go to the app if you guys don't have TV anymore.
This is the final
warning call. Is that me? No. Ooh, someone's going to Hong Kong. All right, enough. We get it. Yeah, yeah. All right, come on. You don't have to do it another language. Yeah, I guess you do have to do another language. Cantonese, let's say. Let's assume it was Cantonese. Oh, maybe they're doing Mandarin also. Here's the point. I'm just going to talk over this. I love skiing you. Oh, this is not happening. So, yeah, set your DVRs or go to the Comedy Central app. All the episodes are up there. And even better, all the episodes, not the episodes, the individual stories are on YouTube. Don't buy the thing. That's fucking crazy upselling stuff. The actual full stories are on YouTube. If you go to This Is Not Happening playlist, if you go to YouTube and type in a search, This Is Not Happening playlist, all of them will come up. And for Canada and Australia, not all of them will come up, but all of them from this year are coming up. So you guys, it's unblocked for season three. So you'll be able to see Diaz's story coming soon. Stanhope's is up there now. Sal Volcano from Impractical Jokers. Joe List from Tuesdays with Story. A bunch of people are already up there. Canada's own Pete Johansson story is up there. Aaron Berg, also from Canada. Ooh, two Canadians are already up there. So go check it out. Let's just start the episode. I don't know what I was going to say about snowboarding and skiing. Oh, I loved it. Oh, and then I stopped for a long time. I stopped. Come on. I'm stopping this for a second. I gotta go. I can't keep waiting on this. Anyway. Yeah, I skied for a long time. Then I stopped. College was the last time with my friend Alicia Bergler. And we went on a ski trip, and that was the last one I went to for about 15 years. And then I was in Edmonton. And Rick Brunson, owner of Rick Brunson's House of Comedy in Edmonton. Oh, no, it's a comic strip in Edmonton. But he owns it. He and his son Noah took me skiing on some little hill, and I got the love again. It had been 15 years, and I was like, this is amazing. I mean, it took me a few runs to get it, but once I did, it was fucking tremendous. It was tremendous. And then shortly after, I went to do a Swiss comedy festival, and I went skiing with my brother in the Alps, and I'm just back in, you guys. And we do every year, we do a Vail trip with Marina Zissi and Simone, where we go back-to-back weeks at the Comedy Works in Denver, and then in between, we go skiing. It's the best. There's something about it. Here's what I think it is, because my friend Rachel Simmons, also been on this podcast, I took her to either Big Bear or Mammoth last year. I broke my ankle. So we planned this trip, and then I couldn't go because my ankle was broken because of Whistler. Still worth it. Even the half a day in Whistler was amazing and worth it. So she pointed this out, and I think it's right. There's something to when you're skiing that you have to put all your focus, and snowboarding too, all your focus on your task. Your eyes have to be on the ground in front of you, on the terrain, and it's just sort of meditative. It sort of allows you to like shut off from the rest of the world and just think about that. And then you come around a turn, you see like the whole mountain below you, or maybe a town. This was like that in Zermatt. We're skiing by the Matterhorn. You come around a turn and you see Zermatt fucking way, way below you, and all these mountains, and it's fucking gorgeous. and you'll stop and it'll take your breath away for a second. And you'll stop and then you can take it all in. But then you go back to skiing, snowboarding. There's similarities. But you go back to the task and it's just, I don't know, it just clears your mind. There's something to it. There's something to it. And no matter what level you're at, you know, yellow, what's the blue? What's below blue? Green. I don't do blacks anymore. I don't try. An occasional one I'll do, but I got to really look, make sure it's not mogul-y. I don't have to challenge myself. I'm fucking on the way down athletically, not the way up. So I just go in my range, and I just fucking have a great time, try to ski. Occasionally I'll try to keep up with some snowboarders that I'm skiing with and try to make the jumps they're making. And then, yeah, I break my ankle, but whatever. I got to get back out to it. Now that I'm talking about it, I got to get back out to it. Anyway, let's start the episode, you guys. No dates to promote. No dates. Ladies and gentlemen, I was sure there was something. Well, I said this is not happening, so let's just start. Oh, by the way, if you haven't seen a movie, you want a movie choice? It's foreign, but it's great. I think it's Korean or Japanese. Yes, it's racist, but it's one of those. Train to Busan. It's a fucking new school zombie movie, and it's fucking tremendous. Don't even watch any fucking previews. Just fucking go see it. God, it was good. So tense. Whew. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, episode 286, Shredding the Gnar with Craig Campbell. Starts now.
I got a black ski mask, but I don't ski, but I snowboard, dash an MC off peak. If one of you try to violate me, you get a punch in the face in my front door key. Yes. Punch in the neck with my back door key. Yes. Boxing them out on my X6 key. Boxing the eye with a fob I used to log into my HSBC. Talk about banks, kill them with peas, run up in your girl's house.
This is what they talk about in Israel when Moses went into, they took his scouts into Israel.
Oh, yeah.
The land of milk and honey, and the grapes were like the size of your fist.
Yeah. Go on back. Yeah. And you don't mind?
No, I don't mind. Pull this up to your face, though. Pull this up to your face.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. That's the only one.
Fucking twist up your gain, man. What kind of fucking operation is it?
That's as much as I do. It's like, pull your hand closer.
Can you move your hand closer to the microphone? Your face closer.
What is that one? I've never seen that one.
That's because you've never seen the best. Fucking beyond unreal. All right. Grasshopper Labs.
Is that Hopper weed or Labs? Is that tobacco?
Let's leave it up to the imagination.
Fair enough. It looks like
first
a full
rule
pen.
Of drug club, right?
Yeah. Don't mention it. There was this fighter that got in trouble for his post-fight press conference, Nate Diaz. And he's smoking that. And people are like, what are you smoking? He's like, that's CBD, man. I'm the U.S. Athletic Association. I was like, wait, what?
Take a look at that. CBD?
Yeah, just the...
Do you know what that means? CBD?
Cannabis.
Oh, okay. Cannabinoids.
Oh, it's your own one, moose fucker.
Yeah, of course.
Somebody engraved it for you.
Yeah, not particularly well, but it's well enough that it's unique for me.
Wow.
It's quite a beauty, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a full pen. Yeah. A doctor could have this.
Yeah, it's outrageous.
Not even a weed doctor.
Yeah, it's a pretty effective little tool if getting a bit scattered is on your list of things to do.
I got a little bit of, I've been cutting down on weed lately.
A what? What an embarrassing thing to start an interview with. Can we check the batteries again? What the hell is wrong with you?
I'm sorry.
What a horrific thing to say. Jesus. Wow. You hate rainbows now too?
No.
What's next?
I don't stop. I just do like 3 or 4 days a week instead of like so 20 idiot. Times a week.
Stop it.
Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize. I welcome you to my home and I treat you like
and
this.
Spit on me like that. It's incredible. I'm going to reload this for you just so if this is one of your days of the week, you can wedge it into your now newly regimented marijuana cycle.
I got regular stuff too we can smoke.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Regular.
The kind that burns.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, that might be a good idea.
Yeah, let's do that. No, leave your shit in there.
What the hell am I? Oh, no. That would be a horrible thing to lose. I hope to Christ I've left it alone. Oh, that's actually something that happens, funnily enough, when you get such a slick injection device type pen as this. Yeah. You just you have to stop in front of your own door and check for your keys like 30 times.
Those oil things get me too gone. They get me scattered.
You start to hide it on yourself out of fear.
That you'll always...
Yeah, just like... That is one element of it that I'm sure you can appreciate. And certainly people listening that can relate to that. I don't know if anybody's like, you know, medically medicating. I'm imagining a lot of people are.
Yeah.
That you have to like make that decision to... Today,
dude,
every time you do it, you got to decide, like, do I want to be so fucked out of my tree that it's cartoon world until, like, you know.
Yeah, some people don't understand where you smoke those things and it's like, yeah, whatever, I'll take a few hits. Like, yeah, man, this is like way harsher.
Yeah,
oil.
No, you're going on a holiday now.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. It's fun to bring people into that world, though.
To the holiday world?
To scare the hell out of them.
I just like the people who... Like the New Yorkers who are like, the weed here is just as good as anywhere.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's not, man. It's not. You haven't smoked Los Angeles weed. You haven't smoked Colorado weed or BC bud. It's just like.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all different. And
they don't believe you until they smoke it. And then they go, fuck.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I love underestimating weed. I still have that. You know, that's why I think I like luring people into that scenario, because I, like yourself, as you just said, have totally come over to respect all of it. Like, there's really intense strains out there. And when I often meet people that are just like, it doesn't even affect me anymore. I'm just like,
sounds like a challenge.
Yes, absolutely. Like, and if there's anybody who's done bags of it in a lifetime and still having those moments where you just utterly underestimated it.
You know,
like getting paid sometimes in Canada at medical marijuana shows. You'll get
paid in weed.
You get paid in medical weed, of course.
And then you get so much, and the stuff you couldn't normally afford, you're like, I'm not spending that much on an eighth, but you're like, oh, well, if you're giving it out, okay, give me the top shelf.
Yeah, and then you go to sleep for a couple of days and can't pack your own socks.
You ever wake up high and not realize you're high, but then until like 3 hours in, you're like, oh, I'm not groggy. This isn't groggy.
All right.
Groggy doesn't last that long.
This is getting more tense.
Yeah.
This is lifting. I've just passed out.
I played golf with my aunt once and didn't realize till like, I realized in hole one, I was like, I'm still high.
Yeah.
Keep my mouth shut until about hole six.
In the morning.
Yeah, in college.
Uh-huh. Nice.
Yeah, my conservative aunt. Did you do you ever meet somebody who says they can't get high?
Never really worked in that world, no. With certain drugs, I'd almost agree. Like, just I had a round table the other day with utter random strangers, and a few of us did agree that... Tramadol doesn't do anything for us.
Really?
Which is a weird thing to like, you know, you don't want to get too like confident with pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
But there is like, you know, a consensus that some people just don't react to it in the same way. And other people are like, you know, for them it's pharmaceutical heroin. Yeah, of course. So I'm assuming that there's probably the same with marijuana. Yeah.
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 There's one girl. She told me that. I was like, I need to smoke with you then, because I don't believe that. And then I saw her. I'm like, let me see. And I saw it get stuck down.
Huff. Yeah.
And then she's like, I'm like, feeling anything? She's like, is there like a slight
thing? Are you still talking?
In my jaw, maybe? And I'm like, oh, no. Then, I believe
her eyes aren't red. They're not glazed.
There was nothing.
Wild. I can see it just because, you know, I have two friend heads pop up right away that I'm sure anybody else would have, you know, at least that number of friends that just can't get drunk.
Can't get drunk.
Right, yeah. Like, or can just drink copious amounts of spirits,
Australians.
Of hard alcohol. Yes, yeah, of course.
They can
it
never
can be
stop.
It can certainly run in genetic threads, right? Like, you know, it's certainly in the Irish Scottish blood to not be affected in a way that you might expect. But and that's not all, of course, but it's just I don't know what the tolerances are in places also where they drink like crazy, like Russia and Poland and that kind of stuff. I think Germany outdrinks a lot of places that you
somebody left me this about. In my tip jar in my free fringe bucket. It's from Denmark, they said. It smokes okay.
How beautiful is that?
Yeah. Wow. It was great. Yeah, I've gotten a lot of, I don't know if you've gotten anything. Are you doing free fringe or paid fringe?
Paid fringe. And I got a little, my show's Easy Tiger, and I got a little rubber tiger.
Really?
In an envelope. Very nice. I should have opened it on stage, but I was already so scattered with other things.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to do?
I find an hour to be quite limiting. I don't know.
Sort of is, right?
Yeah, so you don't want to get too sidetracked with, you know.
Yeah. Paul Curie doesn't do Wednesdays. He's after me at my venue. And so Wednesdays I just run. And I've been doing like 90, 100 minutes, and just like, yeah. I tell people like, hey, if you want to come to the show, that's the one to go to. And then
Wednesdays,
yeah. It's already gone now. They're done now. But like, yeah, so I can do as long as I want. There's nobody after
me. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you tell the audience.
I tell them, hey, listen,
hey,
here's the deal.
You got a train to catch.
Yeah. If you got a ticket to another show.
No offense.
Yeah, exactly. Get out. It's totally okay. Enjoy it while you can.
But I'm going to stretch this thing out a bit.
And I'm like, normally you can't go to the bathroom, but not for 90 minutes. So go to the bathroom, come back, you know, go get beers, come back.
Wow. I haven't been feeling that. I've had opportunity on some of my nights to stretch, and I've not been feeling that, almost not wanting to get into that world of like negotiating time with them. I think people are so, you know, regimented with stuff they have to do, and it, you know, can put a lot of, just people here seem really, really calculated in their, you know, daily schedules. And I, of course, when I come here, have exactly the same thing happen. Like really get, you know, I'm doing a lot of like capture video of friends and, you know, moving media from different formats and doing, you know, little editing things for people like, there's the Moscow Comedy Bar group that's here, and are you just never seen a more like just a neophyte group of young comedians trying to make it in Moscow? Yeah,
for real.
Yeah, for real.
It's
yeah,
a Moscow just really comedy passionate. Scene?
Yeah, and they're you know, they've come over and they've got one venue and it's, you know, got a lot of noise bleed, but they're just really humble people, and you know, you really feel like an appreciation for being here, and the stories that they try to recount are just really touching. Really can't believe you bought them a drink. They'd just be like, ah! Like,
really?
I don't know if you caught on my little social media thing. If you can believe it, they got Bill Burr tickets.
Yeah.
And I've mounted for me, because it's odd, you know, say honestly, as I look at you, it's one of the most joyous occasions I've ever captured on like surreptitious, you know, video. Yeah. I just thought I'll film them because they are comedians and I'm a comedian as well. I'm having a good day. And I couldn't believe their sincerity of reaction. Like, and also that they sort of had come resigned, I could see later to realize they'd come resigned that they weren't going to get Bill Burr tickets. Like when I first mentioned that Bill Burr was in town, this young fellow just goes like, Bill Burr! You know, he makes that like a barking noise right from the backseat of the car. And I'm like, yeah, yes, the comedian Bill Burr is yeah. He's just like totally like a terrier going crazy. Like, couldn't believe. And then when it was brought up as a potential that they could see Bill Burr, like, yeah, you know, he's doing a show tonight and tomorrow, I think, extra show. Or something. And then just like the process of trying to get a Russian credit card to work.
So they couldn't get it because.
Yeah, no. And so it went through like these roller coasters of like ups and downs of where it became obvious. I could see by their reaction that that was just their normal world of just like, oh, something might happen. And then, it will never happen. Oh. Of course, our dreams always die. And then, of course, they ran in. I drove them over to the Pleasance area and they ran in and paid cash at the door.
They got it.
Oh, yeah. So they saw Bill Burr. And of course, when the guy came back with the Bill Burr tickets, I was filming from the car. And I just couldn't, like, I couldn't believe that they weren't kidding Ari. I'm honest.
They were super stoked.
Just like airplane flying around on the road, like running around in circles and jumping up and down in disbelief and like that kind of madness of pulling your own hair and slapping yourself in the forehead and, you know, the other guy's off in the corner kissing tickets. You know, I kid you not. Like, just like, wow! Well, and I can tell you that that's sort of the aplomb that they take to almost all of their experiences. Like, they're just like literally.
How old are they?
Spread up to maybe 28, 30 and down to about 22, 25.
Oh, that's great.
Really something, yeah. So I've been filming them and I've, you know, I've been sending their stuff. This came from getting into a schedule. So I come home with my little like DAP machine like you have here and I've taped my show. And then before, you know, you have breakfast, you download and clear your deck and get ready for tonight's show and put your shoes by the door. And, you know, I like a real feed myself grapes in a sauna for a couple of hours from like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. And then to meet up with you, this is like my active time. I really like, I was literally clicking my heels to come over and see you just because it's such a great time of the day for me to
actually, you know,
I felt like I was going to work. I'm going to talk to Ari Shaffer. I got to get my parking and clear a couple of emails and just realize what a fucking splendid, spectacular place this
it's
is.
It's fun, this
we're
place,
work,
man.
Ari.
It's pretty fun.
We're at work right
Even
now.
Looking out of these buildings is like...
thing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's Thanks fun. Everyone's coffee, here. Yeah, no problem. Everybody's here. It's just like this weird camp.
Yeah.
You get work done, but you just get fun done too.
Yeah, totally. It's fun work.
Yeah.
You're like, everything's data and everything's work. It's beautiful. And, there's no need to pretense it. You can just like, when you're dealing with your audiences or, your world, I find I'm on stage all the time here.
You find that you're on stage all the
time?
Yeah,
just because, if you're not responding to social media, you're actually on stage or, talking to people that might recognize you. I almost have,
people in coffee shops, I saw your show, old ladies and stuff. It was great. It was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that's interact. Cool. Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
You can see it twice, You don't got to talk to me every time. Just buy a CD. Yeah, it's beautiful, isn't it? It's really something, so... And it's always here. That's another thing that feels good about it, right? It's like, see you next year.
How many times in a row have you come to this?
Stupidsville? I don't know what's
really?
The number. Yeah. Gazillion? You guys still using Gazillion over the month?
Yeah, we still use
since
that.
I think the first one was 95. Yeah. And then just like I've only missed a couple since then. There's nothing else I could possibly be doing that I'd enjoy as much.
Yeah.
In August, Like, why would you not do this, right? You know that. You can see that. Like.
Yeah, it's just fun.
Yeah, just interact with
I love world. How you're like the super center of attention for 1 hour a day where it's all about you. And then at 23 hours a day, it's completely not about you.
Isolation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, whatever, you're just some...
Yeah, time management.
What do you mean?
Just that you've got that next 23 hours to partition to, to the
means to work
and needs.
Or try to stay away from Coke or not stay away from
and
it.
Try and think of what you're going to change the next night. Yeah. And that's a beautiful process, isn't it? And getting things that are consistent, that are anchors, that are new, that you're then able to move away from older stuff to develop, off script.
Yeah. I like seeing stuff that eventually get to the point where it's like, would you understand this reference if I dropped it on you guys right now?
Yeah.
Would you understand enough American news stories? And then when you try one and
you're saying
yes,
this out loud?
Or yeah, I'm like, do you guys read? Yeah, I do it out loud, but I do it the day before, and then I'll just say the same way on stage. I'm like, do you guys follow our news at all?
Nice.
Can I ask you guys a question? Do you know this story?
This is what I'm talking about.
And if they're like, beautiful. No, they're like, all right. But if I do, I'm like, okay, cool. Then I'm going to say something about it.
And you learn something from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I like also. That's why I still like treating them as a information source for me.
Oh, yeah.
And, badger them, try and get some honesty out of them and see how the rest of them react to it to read the validity of it, It's just like,
I try to ask who in the crowd has had chlamydia.
How is that? Sorry?
I try to ask who in the crowd has had chlamydia.
Yeah.
And then just see the reactions. Yeah. I'm like, all right, let's talk.
Maybe, hey, everybody, back in your chairs. Let's see who doesn't. Let's go. Let's get the smaller number to work with.
What festival did you go to?
Hey?
What is that, a festival?
When I was in the car, that was something I couldn't do and annoyed me. I started to think about maybe you'd appreciate this as well in the States, that one thing that annoys me here that you have in Canada is a fucking knife, right? The Brits are really tight on knives. Like, I no longer carry one in the car. They're really like,
why?
Really
because stabbings and shit?
I guess stabbings, but whatever. It's a fucking...
But you can't have a knife with you?
Tire iron. No, you can... It's a real gray area, and I cross borders a lot, and it's not a gray area there. It's something that I constantly get searched going into France for and constantly get asked about and searched going into the UK returning from.
Really?
Absolutely, yeah. So it's one of those, I know that they're hyper aware of it. However, I also know that it's a gray area. Like, if a cop pulled you over now and you had a knife on you and it was clearly a kitchen knife and it had fallen out of your IKEA box, then they wouldn't be questioning you at all. They wouldn't go deeper into it. But if it had any... potential nefarious intent.
Really?
Then they can act on it, yeah.
I know, America, you can't have those, the ones that go away, like switchblades you can't have, right?
You can't have, for us it's
butterfly knives?
Sorry, switchblades.
Switchblades.
Yes. Yeah, and I believe this
A certain amount of inches.
Exactly.
And if it can be sheathed.
Exactly, this is all from my antiquity of how it was in Alberta when I was a teenager and I actually knew the stats, right?
Really?
Yeah, and of course it changes from border to border and but regardless, the Brits, because of that, really focus on Stanley knives are the big ones in Scotland.
Really?
Yeah.
So what do they do? Because why? Because no one in London fucking cuts down any wood or anything or trees. They don't need knives anywhere in their lives. There's no one that could
Exactly.
I'm a carpenter, man. I'm
people that use knives all the time, or people like me that went to a party two nights ago and haven't, every time I see it hanging off my wrist, had anywhere to slice off my fucking credentials. So if you actually have a pair of scissors,
I got a knife.
Something
I
wanted to ask you about.
Yeah. I got some right here. Hold on.
Scissors would make me more comfortable, actually, now that we've had the knife talk. Yeah, it's just what the hell?
What's this thing?
And of course, you know, at home you just have like a choice of three or four knives, and you've never stabbed somebody in your life. So it's just like, what the hell?
Dude, I was in Hong Kong, or was it?
Well, there's that one time.
Yeah, was it Beijing? But in one of the trains. No, they showed some one of those uprisings in the south, and they showed a machete at a fucking mahjong game. A macheting. And they showed video of it on the fucking public trains.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, what? At the last second before the machete goes into some lady's skull, they blur it out just a little bit.
At least it hit her skull. That's good news.
Yeah, she didn't die.
No, I know she didn't.
Oh, yeah.
Know enough about machete impacts.
Really?
I thought, yeah, that's the best news of the clip, right?
Oh. Like,
yeah, you know, almost anywhere but the skull, and you're in a lot of trouble with a machete.
She was fucked up, though.
I'll bet, of course. You get popped pretty good, but it's no worse than like getting hit with a...
Why? Because the skull will stop it?
Of course.
Where should you hit somebody? Neck?
Yeah, sorry, where should you where should you never wish to be?
Yeah, why should
Of course. Yeah,
neck.
Yeah. Inside exposures are the big ones, of course. Inside of the arms, inside of the thighs, you know, neck, of course, under of the neck rather than back of the neck. Yeah. And then you're into, real trouble. So I'm a bit, you get once on the coconut, if then somebody intervened, you got a chance in there. Like, run, keep running.
It was crazy. Like, mayhem broke out, and the guy got back to the lady and hit her fucking one or two
more times. It's crazier that they're showing it on the news, man.
On the news on a train where little kids are around.
Yeah,
it's
gross. It really affects me.
Oh.
It just that stuff doesn't make me queasy at all.
Yeah.
But it's also what's the benefit of goring everybody out?
It's supposed to just make everyone mad at these uprisers, these Uyghurs. I guess,
but you can also so twist the narrative of the event, based on
state-run media.
Well, not just state-run media, but once you're emotionally affected, you're not thinking straight, right? You're in program mode. You're not in assessment mode. As soon as you're unless you're this, this is the thing, they're breeding us to be fucking sociopaths, right? If you choose not to react to that, in a human sense, which is what they're leading us toward, of course. I was going to say I don't want to bore you to death, but part of me does, because I have theories about these things as far as that the glorification of things what's the latest fucking Game of Thrones type stuff, glorified fictional gore is more abhorrent to me, totally, in my world.
Really?
Yeah, totally. If you know yourself, you can see people. I've seen machete fights before, so that's probably why I'm a tiny bit knowledgeable in where you do and don't want to get hit, of course. But it's something that why would you want to fictionalize that? If you want to see a teenager hanging in the gallows and the close-up of the eye and the intensity of the heart, pumping for the last solid, desperate times, and just what are we doing? Wow, why is that why is that entertainment for you? I like the Operation Channel. I'd rather
see gore that
get
way.
Right in there. And, okay, where is the tumor? And let's.
Oh, that one makes me this is way worse because it seems so real.
That seems odd to me.
Yeah.
That's why I'm the disconnect that our culture is being shunted into is that we're pretending that these things aren't a programming, right? We should have empathy toward human pain and suffering. Rather than a clinical coldness to it, because it's on every billboard and being celebrated.
Yeah, you do get to this. Who cares? I've seen that 50 times when it's on all the time.
Yeah, it was funny. I just to come in and have a TV on is it's a wild thing in my life. Just because it's one of those, it's such an intense programmer, right? It's
I have one. I just throw my shit from my computer up to it. I don't have it plugged into anything.
Yeah.
So I can't get any news.
Use it as a monitor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's kind of freeing to get away from it.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
Of course. Well,
it was nice to have the Olympics on.
I didn't
mind that. When that was on, I was like, yeah, and we'd come in and fucking all the group would watch rowing or something.
Yeah.
It'd be fun to watch I've never been in a situation where people were rooting for different Olympic teams.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Who are you rooting for?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I think we probably have that in common, isn't it? That you're just used to being around foreign cultures and it's neat to be a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
These guys are really into it.
Yeah.
And
see the broadcast too.
Yeah.
Sports, I don't mind for TV. Everything else is ugh.
Yeah. Do you have any experience with rowing?
No. I just mean some like dumb sport that I've never like participated in or know the rules or cycling.
I used to have great interactions with them just because it's something that I talk about sometimes on stage is like I have a kayaking background is sort of my my pinnacle.
Yeah, the kayak is what we watched. They got to go through those things.
In whitewater.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay, yeah, that was my forte. You know?
Really?
Yeah, when I was 16, 17 years old.
You on the kayaking team, Craig Campbell?
I was sixth boat in Canada.
Really?
On the Canadian National Kayaking Team junior boat. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's my like pinnacle of if I can brag about my existence. And I used to have a lot of interactions in flat water training with rowers, you know, like eight men, you know, as I say on stage, facing the wrong fucking way. You know, they're just going like
can't see where you're going.
Fast speed, yeah, and they're yelling at you, right? Because they're a missile in the middle of a lake, not watching themselves, and you know they're kind of hyper protective of their space. And
would they ever like spear other boats?
Of course, yeah, it happens. Of course, it does. Yeah,
as they're just doing the row.
Yeah,
like we're upper class people. Get out of our way.
And then there's a lot of deaths in a cold lake.
Really?
You know, yeah, shit happens. Yeah. You know, it's one of those like very often rowing conditions are pretty, especially against the intensity of the body's exertion. So you've got people who are like, you know, kind of in the peak of a hot workout, body pumping blood and sweating like crazy, and then just entering like a near zero, you know, crystal clear cold lake. It's all I go into disaster stories, and I sometimes, you know, it's great to enjoy your mind, but other times I know I can be so morbid that it's...
I like morbid, though.
Yeah, do you?
I went to Lake Louise.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll get some morbid Louise stories.
I could see, like, falling off there. That's what I was thinking when you said, like, the beautiful... Because it got, like, sunny. We took our shirts off, but you touched the water, and you're like, this is cold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
The water of Lake Louise, exactly that. I don't know of any rowing incidences that would even be at that temperature, but something that I had a moment of release on stage the other day was... there's a group from Seattle, and we were talking about the temperature of the water. Basically, that I was thinking he wouldn't have been a diver, because Seattle's, you know, ocean is quite, I don't know if you've dipped your foot in it, but it's just one of those, like,
freezing.
Wow, this is quite far down. But it's like, well, even like Oregon or even California.
California famously, water gets cold.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. So it's like, you know, way further north than that. So, you know, I had a little holiday on Vancouver Island, and I'd forgotten my wetsuit booties. I had like everything, you know, all my old kayaking, like river gear, 7mm wetsuits, Farmer John's, you know, gloves, the whole package, you know, and like skull cap, an over pair of shorts that are also neoprene so your nuts stay that extra bit warmer, you know, and I went out to go carve some mussels off a rock that was, I stress Ari, not very far out. It wasn't like that big an effort, and I got into the kind of, you know, down the gravel and into the sand and started to kind of like get at a lower tide march on sand gravel toward this like festooned rock, maybe 10 or 12 steps into it, and just my feet were just like, dude, you gotta get the fuck out.
Really?
Now. Yeah. They're just like going like, well, you know, when your feet like start to make a fist, you know, really. And it was one of those. And of course, at first you override it, right? Because you've got the other gear on. So you just sort of like kind of assess it as, I've been in cold water, as you can imagine,
so it's like,
before.
Okay.
Like, okay, you're cold, I get it. You know, I'm braced for you. And then, of course, it just kind of kept ramping it up, those extra notches. And then you start to realize, oh, fuck, I'm actually going to have to leave. And then you start negotiating your escape, right? And that's the kind of the first time you address the fact that, like, I got to get the fuck out of here. Like, this could get a lot worse and multiply and, you know... I like that kind of insight into, like...
I love when you can think you can brave something for a little bit, and you're like, this is fine, and you're like, nope, I was wrong.
Oh, truly.
Even go outside to smoke in, like, northern Alberta in the wintertime, and I'm like, no, I'm okay, and then it's like three puffs in, you're like, oh, this is literally hurting my throat.
Yeah. Tobacco and minus 38.
Just breathing out there. It's like, what am I doing outside? Yeah. Get back in.
Yeah, that's... I've had... Yeah, of course, these are all like old explorations for me, because when you try and explain, oh, this is it. It's a tiny celebration of an ex, but it's... having her experience minus 40 for the first time. Oh. And it was a perfect circumstance, because I, of course, have, you know, yarned on about what minus 40 is like, growing up in Alberta, you guys don't know my... All that shit, right? So it was the perfect opportunity. It was a morning hotel to the hire car and then driving to warmer climates, like move. So it wasn't like we had to function in it at all. We had to get from the hotel lobby to the car. And that was the perfect like insight into, okay, like here we go. It's like short six distance. In the morning, short distance, hoarfrost, that kind of like glinty shards of glass kind of floating in the sky, like as you'd call it.
Hoarfrost?
Hoarfrost, yeah. So if it, like, if it contacts metal, it will just become like ice on it. Like it'll start to collect as, you know, like, but just regardless, like frozen air. Yeah. Like suspended frozen air.
Is 40
like
where it comes together, Celsius and Fahrenheit? Is that where it meets, minus 40?
I wonder. For everybody, Fahrenheit and Celsius come together at exactly the same place. What is it, 32?
Is it
32 is zero, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I'm saying when
and this, when do they when come it, back to each other?
No, when 40, negative 40 means the same thing, or negative 50 means the same thing.
Yeah, right.
At some point,
yeah, because you like cross and become equitable,
and it's the same number,
and then it would be the same. I'd imagine in 72 Kelvin. Then I believe that's when they when absolute zero, the Kelvin scale, whatever, however that works. I should actually know this stuff. Generally, you're asked as a private pilot to be aware of these kind of conditions and ways to describe them, because it's where ice forms on your wings also and your propeller. And but regardless of that aside, we only had to get out to the hire car.
Yeah.
And it's just like fucking amazing to like step out of a building and just realize like that you can't breathe. You're like unable to exhale to get another one because your body's fighting against it. And it's just like, okay, I'll warm up the car and then move closer to the lobby and move you in a tunnel. It's just that like crazy fucking cold. So I think
it's kind of refreshing though, just for a second to feel it, right? Just be like, oh,
just have that
oh my god, oh yeah,
of utter fear for your life,
yeah. Like a roller coaster.
But I have to suggest if anybody listens, into perpetuity into this, you have to get all over, if you care about like cold stories, The Cruelest Miles. And I don't think you and I have ever talked about that before, but it's like the
what is that?
It's a book that was written on the run to bring insulin. Not insulin at all, but I wonder if I should go into the story. I know so little about it right now. My mush head. Regardless, it was what a horrible way to describe a book. It's phenomenal. It's essentially back in the day when I think Nome, Alaska was broken off from the lower panhandle. And they had 6 months of being isolated and the boats not being able to get in. And from that point, they had to move by dog sled only, like hundreds of miles from Anchorage. And if there was a problem, as happened on this, and I'm trying to remember, I think maybe it was a diphtheria vaccine, but regardless, they were always worried that as soon as they got onto the boat and said goodbye, which was like a seminal, yearly event, that always involved people at the last minute they were going out to get on small dinghies to get onto the main boat, that people who were on the beach waving goodbye for the long winter of 4 or 5 months would just like panic and sprint towards the boat, like just pile on it, like, swim the cold sea to get a hold of a rope and just like, take me south. And they were referred to as the cold feeters, people who got cold feet. So that's the, like, that expression was born of that. And they had this diphtheria outbreak and had to bring the
people running at the boat
up from first Seattle and then into Anchorage. And it was also a time, which it was crazy, it was like 1929, when there was just the confluence of light aviation hadn't got glycol yet, hadn't got antifreeze. They were not able to fly in those conditions. So there's
a certain temperature,
sorry, shut off. Yeah, your engine is going to freeze, my friend, because it can't, heat itself beyond the temperature. Doesn't have any jackets to like protect the engine's temperature. And there were volunteer pilots that were letting themselves be available to, the politicians of the day and being denied, like by the military, I'm sorry, we know you will die. That can't happen. So they loaded up dog sleds sleds that the Iditarod dog sled race is now still commemorating and celebrating the life of the, you know, the necessity of the old dogs. And about every 27, 28, 29 miles, these dogs were changed off with other dogs at like way stations to cover like some ridiculous, I think, 450 plus miles.
Oh, because dogs couldn't keep going.
Because dogs can't keep going. Right. And the first dogs, like on the, and this is the other neat thing about it, is that when they first dropped off from the airplane to the dogs, like in Anchorage, and mushed a guy away. I believe his name was Wild Bill McDonald. I you know, I always like to hold on to these characters. Scottish descent. And he was not chastised, but warned against hitting the trail when the thermometer was dropping below, I believe, minus 30. It might have been minus 35, but there was like a threshold that was the rules of the trail, right? That like, if it's 32 and dropping, you don't go tonight, right? And he was going out at like, you know, 37 and dropping, and he's mushing the dogs, of which I believe three died by the first way station, like bleeding lungs and, you know, just like, you know, dead. I'm not kidding you, dead dogs, like right away, like in the first thing. And and they're like, you know, Wild Bill, you know, hold on,
Bill,
go in the morning,
stop killing our dogs, man.
Yeah. And and he said you don't get a name like Wild Bill McDonald by following rules. Mushed the dogs off, and they, of course, you know, got there and saved a number of the villagers, and a book is written about it. And being that it's an American book, I can't believe there's not been a phenomenal film about the cruelest mind.
And that's what the Iditarod race is. It's just a mockable of that.
It's celebrating to reestablish in the mind how dependent that area was on dogs at the time. Like the graduate. It's, if anybody cares anything about dogs or enjoys that kind of, like, you know, the idea of how many they took from the lower Americas to breed with what became like the Malamute, or the, you know, I don't want to get into it because I'm not wise enough to know that, like, the intricacies of the dog world, but essentially they were like breeding big dogs. They were breeding these huge, like, bigger is better kind of mentality, almost wolves, with like shepherds and, you know, Great Danes and stuff, trying to get like big work dogs, right? And then this guy, Sapalala, I think is his name, shows up if I get this wrong, I'll be fucking dead. I think he's a Norwegian dude, and he has like faith in a smaller, like Siberian type husky, like a tiny little dog. And and through the Iditarod dog race, which is earlier, by the way, this is like 1912 or 1911, was interrupted by World War One, right? So they're in these like crazy long dog races, and this guy shows up, and he's just like, I think that my little, like, kind of terrier run forever little dogs are actually going to be the better animal in this.
You don't have to change out.
Because
you don't have to change them out.
Because you don't change them out, and they just pull forever, and that's all they do.
And people are like, no way, you're wrong.
No way, you're wrong. And they, of course, they laughed at his little dogs. They laughed as if a little, as little dogs. And and the first couple of like races that he was trying to, you know, integrate them into the spectrum, he's like ahead by 1,000 miles, and then like goes off on a berm, right? Like, you know, finishes it in a tree, like starts out way too quick and just goes for it like he's in a cartoon, you know, like, yeah. And then gets himself like exposed by nearly dying, of course, because if they go off the trail there, if they lose the dogs, they're like, that's a fatal event for them.
If a dog puts on hedge or something.
Yeah, absolutely. More so if they sprint away from you, because they're not looking back to what they're towing, right?
Yeah.
They're like famous. And that's where you get into like part of the story is that his lead dog, you have to like have a lead dog. You got to have a smart dog in there.
So he's not on a leash?
The like lead dog's at the front,
yeah,
and I think at the front part of a second team, so they're like a good lead dog team, but the lead dog is definitely like the dog in charge. And and his, I believe, oh, I don't want to get the name wrong, but it's now in Central Park. So the next time you're in New York, you can go and pet this dog's head that is now missing like a lot of brass where all the children have petted it, because she is the most famous sled dog ever. And in the actual, after he'd like basically on the third year in the Iditarod, like set the new standard, right? It was just like, now you have to have those dogs if you want to be involved in this race, because the rest of you are just like, you know, half half of the race behind. That kind of different advantage. Wow. And then, of course, all of a sudden it comes up that dogs are needed to bring a serum in to save a village that's dying of a disease. And
get that Norwegian.
Get that Norwegian dude. Yeah. And he shows up and it's just like, oh, it's amazing, Ari. I'm just like writhing on your couch as I tell you this. And he, of course, like, he does the lion's share of it. I think he covers, like, what did I tell you, that the dogs turn over at 27 miles? His, I believe his leg was 225 miles in the worst of those conditions. And I kid you not, he didn't finish the leg into the village. I kid you fucking not. Like, just because humility and not being a hog of fame and being a...
What do you mean he didn't finish the leg into the village? What does that mean?
That I believe a sled team came from the village and like handed over the serum and then came into like a cavalcade parade and celebration and film.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah, it's a really like unbelievably like very American tragic story.
Get it.
Yeah, and kind of that just like died in obscurity and that's why the dog is celebrated to the degree it is. I think she's I don't want to get it wrong, but Bolo. I think she might be Bolo, but
really?
Regardless, yeah, it's just one I like, a very, very touching thing. I can't believe that it's not a film yet. Yeah, The Cruelest Miles.
Yeah, they're always looking to make other films. Why not do that? That sounds cool.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just like got everything. It's such a beautiful story. It's fun. And then you think, like, I often think of it when I'm in the UK because they have miles. Like, I don't think of it in Canada like you might in the States where I, don't see road signs in miles. But when you see, like, fucking 200 miles or something like that and you realize how long it takes you to drive in a car and you realize you're not, like, minus 40.
Yeah, sometimes I think about that when I'm in a car, like up in the Highlands and stuff where I was like, how long would it have taken
to walk?
To get where,
a long time.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I love that element of it. So, Now, let's get into some snowboarding.
Yeah, there you go.
Let's kick this into snowboarding here. And that was as subtle as we could have made it.
Yeah, I was looking for when we were talking about Moscow.
Hilarious.
I thought segue, but then this, I was like, I don't know, maybe.
Well, what about Reykjavik? I was there skiing, which is
were you really?
To start with. Yeah. Oh. So a little like, and that's something that you can do 100 times. Like talk to the guys about bringing you over in the winter. And
you did that tour, right? Altitude Tour? No, what was it called?
Well, there's the Snowden Tour that we do in Canada every year. Yeah, but like the Scandinavians are just as keen as we are to do that.
Really?
Yeah, of course. If you just, like, they're just so reasonable and logical, right? They're just like, you tell them, hey, I also like snowboarding. Could I come back to Reykjavik in the winter and like do some gigs and snowboard? They're just like, yeah, that would make sense if you like the snowboarding.
Yeah.
And you also
I did it in Whistler this year.
Yeah.
I was like, because I was in Vancouver for whatever, for
good
a week.
Conditions?
And that, yeah, great.
Yeah, what were you like 2 weeks after? After us, weren't you? Something like that. I was just missing you last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in Vancouver anyway. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, I was stalking you, and you're clearly like, who the fuck are you, Campbell? We just spoke once about mushrooms. Jesus, don't be overly familiar.
Oh, yeah. So, no, we did just pass each other.
Yeah.
I remember that.
I thought
now.
So, yeah. Yeah, and weed, how was Whistler anyway? How was the...
Pretty good. I broke my ankle.
You fucking are kidding.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
But, whoa.
Yeah.
Well, route? Catch it on a route?
No, I went off. Okay, so I try to go off piste a little bit and do those little jumps through the woods and stuff.
Yeah.
It's harder on, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like it's harder on skis than on boards. And so I went in there and I was like going a little too fast, trying to duck under a branch.
Mm-hmm.
And then I really had to pull out of it and there's nowhere to pull out.
Oh,
in the woods.
Man, and your leg hit the tree.
Yeah, so toppled, man. It wasn't even that bad. I just fell over.
Well, take me through the dynamics of it. What part of the board hooked or how did the board stop and you? Oh, sorry, ski.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ari. Yeah. Okay, you said it 7 times.
Yeah.
I apologize. Okay.
So ski. So that I just tried to pull out. And then I had
say
to
no more. Of course, you broke your ankle. That's how
and
it
then it just toppled.
That's a ski story. Yeah, your legs are doing different things. You're in the woods. There's trees. Your one leg's behind one.
What do you got to worry about? Catching on roots and shit?
Yeah, and if you like catch it between the legs, right? Like if something like goes through your legs off-piste, like a root or a branch, and sort of like skewers you and then breaks you fast. So that's what I was having in mind that you were doing.
Because
to break an ankle snowboarding is quite a like intricate thing to possibly pull off. Because to isolate one ankle is a really hard thing to do.
Way.
And it has to usually be quite dramatic, like, to get those kind of forces involved in it, to have the ankle be the next thing that gives out. But skiing, of course, you just go out, right?
Yeah.
You catch a lift and then you break your fucking ankles.
Yeah, the board didn't release.
Oh God! Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then it was like a fuck.
See,
I
had
it come
like
off?
racer type.
Yeah, one came off, the other one didn't.
Oh my goodness!
They're supposed to release on
compound?
Like impact, like
did
that.
Did it actually like? It wouldn't in a ski boot, would it? Did it like pierce the skin?
No. Okay, no, okay. Nothing bad. I skied down.
Did you?
Yeah, I didn't realize it. I just thought it was twisted.
What a hero.
Yeah, right?
Wow, nice. And then took the boot off and...
The boot coming off was hard, man. That hurt.
That's the hardest bit of it all, of course.
Yeah. Because like, it hurts more than I thought.
Don't pull on that so much. I think,
let's loosen it more. Wow. Man, that one hurt.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That so chuffs me.
I really thought I'd be back the next day. I had 2 days there. Right. I realized I'm good. I'll just rest it today.
A boot is an amazing fucking brace, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the best thing ever.
Just left the boot on.
Of course. For 6 months, you'd be perfect. Yeah. And how's the recovery?
Oh, totally good. I've been running up Arthur's Seat.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. What about snowboarding? Why don't you, let's try that.
Well, I keep thinking about it. Yeah. Tell me this, though.
Can you surf? Sorry to interrupt.
No, never surfed.
Okay. Go ahead.
I've skateboarded a little.
Okay, yeah, good. That's okay. Good.
But no major tricks or anything. I can skate off curbs down, but that's about it. Okay, I mean, just go.
Yeah, of course.
I just, when I go skiing, I have max 3 or 4 days. And to give up one of the days to learn this new thing seems kind of like, oh no, I can't do it.
Okay, then...
If I had a month somewhere, I'd be like, yeah, for
things?
Sure. Yeah.
Expedite things first. Operative, I always like to say, snowboarding, snow. Yeah. So don't dick around with if the conditions aren't pristine, which of course, if you're a great skier, you're going to want to get out and really, ride fresh powder as it were.
For sure.
But it's a hard day to sacrifice, but snowboards love snow.
Really?
Right. So the most you can learn the quickest is going to be if you're giving yourself the ability to dump hard in it. Quick.
Right.
So, if you go out in, kind of deep snow conditions and
dude,
give it.
They had that at Whistler.
Yeah,
it
exactly.
Was that.
Yeah,
God, it was just like you stop and nope, you're going down.
I don't know if I would start at Whistler just because you're in a really different situation there with altitude and near the sea as it is.
Okay.
The variability of conditions is quite pronounced.
I go to Vail every year too. Or I go to Vail and.
So you want somewhere, that you can do, triples on the same lift 100 times in a row, run.
Okay.
It's like going tobogganing. You want to go tobogganing. You want to get a good piece, good conditions, and then just run that, safety zone because you've seen the same hits and you see where your bum went in 3 runs ago and, where you're actually able to read your conditions without having roots show up that you didn't know about or roads that you weren't thinking about or, snowmobile tracks or stuff that's really going to have you unstick and lose confidence and all that kind of stuff. And then really, if you've got a skateboard background and you have the idea that you can control it with those types of moves, then I think the learning curve is quite steep. And then the next step for me that's amazing about snowboards is after that, once you figure out how you can brake, once you have braking worked out, then essentially you can go on the hardest runs that are ever you can drop in off cliffs after that because you're in, because you can establish the braking position from any moment.
Right.
You're looking down mountain in the most defensive position possible. You're in your start position, and then you can feather leaf your way down, steep chutes or mogul fields.
Moguls are way easier on a board than on skis. If you're over your head, if you're I got to do this real slow. So on skis, fucking moguls suck.
Okay, I've always the sort of paradigm or the scuttlebutt on the street. I've always thought people said the same of moguls with snowboards. So
they're harder.
People hate them. Yeah, that they're way harder. So I'd argue with my experience with them, I really like moguls, and that's another thing that I think the next step after that, if anybody has an interest in doing steps and steps and steps, is to always go the hardest way down. Once you're capable, if you want your skill base to grow, because that's one thing that you will get, if you're riding bigger mountains, that the last half of it sometimes can be carnage. You get people who can ride nice conditions, and then as soon as they get to 10 miles before the parking lot, you're in broken ankle territory, right? And those are essentially the workman-like legs of the mountain are the ones that you want to be best at. You want to be able to do jump turns, and you want to be able to ride in tracks, and a big thing about snowboarding as well that takes it in a different dynamic as well is you're a slave to gravity, so you're carrying speed into things is often
a necessity. Oh, yeah.
You don't have the ability to kind of ski along, so
those tweener trails from one to another where you have to go catwalks.
Okay, yeah.
Sure. Snowboarders seem like they're like, fuck, yeah. I hate this.
Yeah, and especially when you can't tell at a distance if they're frozen or not, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've had that happen before, but yeah, it's like on our last, this is so horrible, Ari, I'm going to talk about our last heli experience. You know, when you're up in the helicopter out there, you're snowboarding in the Canadian mountains, you know, on our last winter's heli, yeah. Yep, at,
they dropped you out of a helicopter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I would love to do that. Yeah. Virgin.
So utterly virgin, yeah. Yeah. Wow. Until you get to the cat track.
Right.
Until you're like coming out of the woods and it's your first time, you know, on a board that year and your legs are just like in that place where you can't even like, you can't bend over. You can't like, you know, you're almost straight legged. Like you're using your toes as shock absorbers rather than your thighs. And you're coming out of the woods and you're realizing if you wipe out, you're going to have to crawl through like, you know, a meter of powder and swim basically. Like the commitment necessary is insane, right? Like you're coming through places you're probably not good enough to ride at high speed with a lot of trees around, and then you hit a cat track and essentially, you know, just come fully unstuck, you know, like board above the head kind of thing, like where you're just sort of like, well, and of course that's where everybody's meeting and you're like looking at strangers when you're pulling yourself off the ground, like, hey, how is everybody? Yeah. Oh, it's just beautiful. I love
it. Yeah, we got our stupid poles. You guys don't have your poles.
Exactly. Yeah, some guys do now though.
Really?
Some like backcountry guys will do that. Yeah, and the same people will have like snowshoes also. So that's like...
What, with them?
Yeah, with them in a pack.
Oh.
That's a big thing that happens in some of the... Like the resorts that I would like you to see in Canada, like Red Mountain or Whitewater in Nelson.
Where are those? I looked up some of the ones you told me about.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to go there. And everyone was like, dude, that's like 6 hours away from Vancouver. You can't get there.
Exactly.
I was like, oh, all right.
Oh, you really, you know.
I thought it was like close enough where I could just like, let me just go 2 days ahead of time, then come back in. They're like, nah, it's not going to.
Yeah, no, it's a bit of a commitment.
Yeah, I didn't realize.
But it's also
it's
like,
late.
It's, you know, it's the same thing 7-6 hours from Calgary, right?
Yeah, so yeah, same
exactly
shit, exactly.
Now, but then you can also imagine to, you know, stretch your mind into what sort of mountains you might be in and how different they might be than the, you know, sort of the Rockies that are on the west side of them, right?
Right.
So you've got like, you've got a very different snow cover, very different trees, you know, very different accumulation, average temperatures, the state that the snow is being held in, you know, it accumulates on top of itself. And even if you only get like a few centimeters, if the temperature has been constant, you still have like a meter of base under you, or, you know, 2 meters of base. And
there's not exposed fucking rock.
And not exposed rock,
dirt.
and enough snow cover every year, where it also is, like smooth contours.
Right.
So like big rocks or stumps, as they have in some of those types of
when
resorts.
Did you start getting to the place of like of going super off road
almost right away?
Really?
That's why another reason I, you know, trumpet a snowboard, just because almost right away you can make big commitments into very, you know, challenging terrain.
Yeah.
You can bum check cliff drops, right?
What does that mean?
You can just basically like ride off it in ready position, like you would if you were like swimming a river, right? Like head up facing downstream, back paddling while you're kicking off of rocks, you know, that kind of like defensive,
yeah,
you know, river kung fu as you're falling off a cliff, right? You know, yeah,
you don't have to commit to them and just fucking throw yourself into them.
No, there's no, well, like that you can actually, that's a neat extension when you get to the next stage for me. That's like an epiphany stage, is when you're doing that backcountry stuff. This is wonderful for me, Ari. I still remember where it happened and when it happened. This is now again in Whitewater, where you're just like going through pillows off piste, and the first time that you've been doing it so often in the day that you think, I could catch air and clear obstacles, right?
All right.
Like you start looking for air routes. That's like in the next, you know,
in order to get over a bush,
yeah,
to get over.
Yeah, you think it'd be a lot less work if I just skied this one.
Whoa.
And then I'd be in that powder field over there rather than working all these trees that are on my ley line, right? And then you think like, oh, I've done like three of those today that are all keepers. And then you get into like, you know, the catching your jumps and maintaining, you know, speed and feeling the different terrain conditions and how it feels when you have the catch on it.
Yeah, what's the catch like? Is that just kill your knees?
Exactly. It's making that, like, the assessment of it, because sometimes the catch can be way late from the surface, right, when it's really light. And that's where, you know, for me, that would be challenging my my capabilities.
To see when it gets packed in enough as you land?
When
to,
you
like,
can turn on it.
Oh, right.
Yeah, because if you get, as they call, I've only had it a few times in my life, but as they refer to it, a champagne powder, you're, like, almost in those little, like, little tiny... like styrofoam bubbles, like sand, where you just utterly sink through it, like, you know, like 3-4 feet into it.
So you can't turn on that for until you're whipping it.
You're really going fast. So at that point, you also then have to, like, plan uphill mounts when you're going to decide if you're going to take a rest, because it's a hour and a half to turn in as well, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're not hauling ass, so you're having to read, and very often, of course, you're putting up quite a spray at the same time. Often you'll not have, like, the best, you know, you might have flat light. So you're trying to ride, like, long contours, and then you just start, you know, you start impacting stuff. At, you realize, like, sort of, oh, I'm in the air, right? You have that, like, moment of, ah! And then just get captured in, like, the nicest swimming pool that ever, you know, came into your life. Like, literally, like, better than water. Like, just captured, and then get back up if you aren't dug in so much that you can't, that you have to swim out. And that's when you get into, like, little getting into perches. So you see, like, the snowboarders in those backcountry conditions kind of, like, just riding outside of each other's tracks. And then when somebody takes a stop, you, like, look for the next best position that won't influence them to be, like, ready to be going 40 miles an hour quickly.
Right past them.
To be able to get float going again, right? Because you're in a place that you're going to sink immediately if you've got anything close to a flat or an incline. And that's a really, you get into precarious capability of it. It feels like you don't have anything under you. It's that sensitive, right? Imagine, like, you've got to carry speed to have any feedback from the powder snow. And then it just gets really squirrely really quick. Like,
so the faster you go, the higher up you stay on it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so you're hoping, you know, that your nose is clearing, like porpoising, as you would say in boat terms. So you're kind of like, your nose is trying to find the surface also, but only at speed. If you sink it in, if you nose it in, which, yeah, and that brings me to, I still remember in Mirabel, France, when a friend of mine, we were talking about, have you heard of a tomahawk wipeout before? This is like, it's a beautiful moment. Like,
what is that?
I just, like, you know, not, you hear people tomahawking and you don't think about it. And I tomahawked, like, really under a lift line in France, just like when you're humping it along, like I had in my head when you were asking about, like, how fast you got to go to have lift kind of thing. That when you, if you plant it like that, right? Like if you're side on and you're carrying big speed and you say catch a root or some, you know, unknown obstacle that really stops your board quick, then you cartwheel like an Olympic athlete, right? So, like, you're now just like hat off, gloves off, you know, like goggles flying, and right, great centrifugal forces, of course. And if you're still in that mode of trying to figure out what you might have hit or what you're going toward, like if you're not able, then sometimes you have this, which I've had before, this tremendous feeling when the first cartwheel goes in, like when your head dives in, and then you feel the weight and the momentum of your own board and legs, and you realize, oh, we're going again. You know, where you realize you're in a big old, like, washing machine, right? Like, just carrying wicked side speed into chopping.
Whoa.
And then you would imagine, as you can, from the side, in a cartoon mind, you might think that person's a fucking tomahawk. Yeah, when you can see the snowboard is in a tomahawk position, right? So, yeah, I had that explained to me, yeah, and I just, like, shitting myself laughing. It's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been a tomahawk. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Where have you been on these things?
So many neat places, Ari. So, like, through France, through Austria.
Austria is cool, right?
Of course. Yeah, they're all just, you know, it's all, I get so non-judgmental of it because it's all just snow, you know? It's like, that's something that I like people.
A ride's a ride, a line's a line.
If you're out snowboarding, you know, you don't got to check your passport. That's just, you're having a good day, you know? Just so good.
Dude, there really is something to be like, what?
I have to interject. Yeah. There, one thing, if we can save lives, as I think we had in our last talk, I have to have the safety element there. the difference in how Europe and North America, I don't know America as much, but definitely Canada, depict obstacles and hazards, like threats to life, essentially, are more area-specific and less hazard-specific than ours. Like, if you took my advice ever and you drove the 7 fucking hours, you don't want to drive from Vancouver, Calgary, to go to, you know, Whitewater, Nelson, or Red, or places like this. If you get, you know, to these places, you will find that, like, if you're riding like a backside multi-cliff kind of pillow field, I want to sell this to you, right? So you're like, you know, you've come off the lifts, you've skateboarded with 1 foot strapped in for like maybe 10 minutes, some of it uphill, really burning the thigh and working it, you know, getting like
nice
workout, and then come to like this, you know, huge view of the valley, vista, and then you just drop off into like the first steep kind of goes into trees, and then that, you know, flattens out a little bit, and then you just start going into a natural gradient that's like pillow fields. So you're just able to keep, you know, maintain speed, but you're going through like a foot or two of, you know, fresh untouched powder, and being able to make like big commitment moves in a semi wide open, like 10 minute pitch face. Like, just like I can tell you, it's just heaven. Like, it's, you know, it's an unbelievable thing. But if you come to a cliff, or if you come to like a chute that has a warning or a hazard on it, there's a cliff there. You don't want to go any further
in
there.
In North America. It's
like,
Canada. Hey, stop right here.
Yeah, right here. Like, there is an obstacle. It's right close here. And this is like a reason why you shouldn't, you know, continue on here. Like, take off your board and crawl back if you don't have a better plan left or right. Right?
Right.
And in Austria, it's like they put that sign over near the toilets or by the shed where the guys who, you know, work the lifts get to go and play cards. And it's sort of like, you know, if you read it on the map, you might see that, oh, this is very hazardous.
Really?
Which, you know, my horrible French for Austria.
And then you just got to figure out what they mean.
And then you, of course, when you're airborne, as I have been, you then find out retrospectively that, in fact, the hazard is the area that essentially, it's a big, big thing in Europe. If you cross under the tape, if you decide to off piece, you are out of like all assistance of liability or in any way.
No one's going to come search you there.
They'll come and get you for sure. But your actual risk assessment is entirely on your shoulders. And I found that out. The clue for me, and this is something, you know, for people to have in their heads, if you're like pounding it down in poor visibility, carrying pretty decent speed through not particularly, semi-pushy, but only because it's old snow, the first clue that I should have clocked is that that the area that I was riding wasn't as beat up as the other bits. So the other bits were like really worn out, and to a degree of like regularity. So the opportunity might have been there for somebody to ride where I was. But suddenly I'm in a place that's like kind of nice riding. So I just like, you know, tucked in and enjoyed it. Oh, I get, you know, you kind of take what you can get and think, if I get 3 or 4 good turns in a row, that's like a, you know, a bonus today because the conditions are marginal, right? So you're flying along. And then the next thing is, of course, I get a bit of chatter, like I cross a trail essentially. So there's a traverse path above a cliff line.
Yeah.
So you've got the skiers that have like got to the, you know, the place that
they're skiing along the cliff line.
And they're now skiing along. Yeah. So of course you clip that with your board at speed.
You're going right through it, though.
And then you're going right through it. But you have that second like hit of chatter of just like, wow, that was weird. Why would that happen? And then, of course, the next thing you feel is weightlessness, right? You're just like, holy fuck, I'm airborne, right? And then it's just a matter of like how far you're going to fall until you, as I did, impacted the opposite cliff face.
No way, you went through it?
So I went to like a pillow of snow on the opposite side of the drop.
With your body?
And just like in a like guy, you know, drop from space position, right? Like in a chair. Fell into a chair and was able to like dig out and ride on and realize that like my life, when I looked at the other cliff faces that were in the region, the region that has hazards, that there are fatals all over the place.
If you fall off that, you've got no chance.
Yeah, and I could see that I could be just as easily ill aware of the run I was doing.
Right.
You know, when you get into, that's a big part as well that, you know, people.
Wait, you went off and hit the other cliff face?
Yeah, cliff face, yeah.
Like that, with your body?
But it's pillowed with snow at the time, right? So
softer.
The opposite face, that's actually something that came into mind this week as well. Yeah, it's one of my favorite elements of like skiing, snowboarding, right? Is that, you know, you get into like assessment, right? Where you have to like decide if you're tired or, you know, why you're not able to read something and whether or not it's your, you know, your brain telling you to keep going, or you have to have that like skill of assessing danger. And same as like, you know, whitewater is like that, you know, rafting. My early days were like whitewater rafting and, you know, having to decide if you're going to fucking die in water. But regardless.
So you're saying, are we careful.
Keep going.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. I'll ask him when he comes back in, if he needs a kitchen or anything, but he can just do it.
Okay. Yeah, of course. Yeah. It'd be nice to have some background noise.
Your thing is to tell people to be careful, look at where you're going?
Yeah.
Is that what you're trying to say, or no?
No, that you should carry into it knowledge of, like, you know, the map of the piste. You should know these things. Right. You shouldn't just, like, blindly go snowboarding down things.
When I see people getting under that tape, it's like, wow.
Oh, sorry, no, this is what I was saying, Ari, is that, like, reassessing your compass mentis, right? Like, because you're in pretty challenging conditions, and you think, am I just tired? Am I thinking that I can clear that because I've, like, you know, had too much to drink, or what the fuck's going on here? And, of course, you know, you're getting to places that push your abilities. And we were in Kicking Horse near Golden in British Columbia. And,
yeah, by Alex.
And we're on, this off-piste back run. And we got to like a cliff face, essentially. And some of the guys were like clearing it at speed, like, you know, wanting to make it all season kind of thing. And the conditions were just right. So
perfect for it.
Made big launches. Yeah. So, you know, you kind of get into position to watch people do big launches. And so, you know, one guy.
That's fun about snowboarders, just watching them. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. And so, there were the guys that we were with as well were like at the conditions were so pristine that they were like practicing forward flips off of like launches. So like when you're off piste and you're just hitting like, you know, untouched pillows and then deciding to do a forward, like, you know, commando roll and catching that, you know, that trick essentially in the bush. It's just like, wow, this is, you know, quite nice. And I was at this cliff face where clearly like there's a ski track where people are having to find an easier way down. And I asked one of our mutual friends in Vancouver, Andy, who's a phenomenal skier, like, I just said to Andy, if I carry I was maybe 10 feet away from him, behind him and looking off the cliff face and then seeing another sort of like maybe 30 or 40 feet down, I could see more snow beyond like my own vision, right? So I thought if I carried speed, I could land in that snow further on, the snow that I can see. But I thought I'll use Andy's eyes because he's at the cliff face. I was just like, you know, Andy, if I like carry the speed I have from this point here.
What do you mean? You yell at him?
Yeah. So he's like, you know, side on to the cliff and kind of like assessing it and, you know.
So you're way up, like, hey, can I make that jump?
Yeah. Hey, Andy, if I carry the speed from here to the face and like, and launch it, what will happen? Like, do I have a landing, right? You quite often will ask that in snowboarding or backcountry. Do I got a landing there, man? You know, and or they'll design the, you know, they'll describe the area that you're likely to impact. And he just like looked at me really frankly, just said, you'll die. You'll die. Don't do that. Like, just said, don't do that. Like, don't. You will die. And then I got to the face and realized that, like, from the distance away I was, there's no way I would have carried the gap. And the gap led to a facing cliff face.
You'll die.
Yeah, just like that. Yeah, don't move from where you are because you will die if you attempt that. Yeah. And the facing wall, which was basically just the cliff that I was looking at the top of, had fallen away down further down the mountain, right? So there's just like a huge V of granite cold rock, the face of which that I would have like maybe hit halfway down like at speed, was just covered in like kind of wet running icy snow, you know, and then that all filtered down to a really narrow like creek bed with maybe 3 or 4 inches of like mountain ice water kind of trickling through really jagged rocks and debris.
Really beautiful place to die.
Just Can you imagine to just like, you know, maybe smack off clunk, the back clunk. Wall, like clunk, 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 and then just your spine stuck right in a cold river. Just like, I love that. I love that. I still nearly did that.
What place does marijuana have with snowboarding?
It is so glove in hand.
It's so, really?
It's unreal. Yeah, it's really, there's rarely a symbiosis that I could better, like, have faith in and trumpet.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so, it's like.
Always like that, right? Since it started,
yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah, but it's such a dangerous thing as well, because they're cracking down on it to such a degree.
What do you mean?
They're just really like, you know, the number of cops on the mountains that are going on now and the attitude towards it of the public is just really
Why? Because they got to like cater to the fucking families
meatheads,
that are there?
Of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course. And that there's, you know, the belief that it's less performance, you know, enhancing and more performance impeding in their minds. And, you know, there's the reefer madness taken to it. But regardless, it's been, you know, since the beginning of snowboarding, whenever, you know, that.
Wait. So what do? They arrest people? They see you going into the woods?
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course they would. Yeah, they're police on the mountain, right? So they're up there snowboarding in uniforms and skiing in uniform. And, you know, and of course, on a mountain in slack air, you can smell a joint from what?
Also, if you go smoke, if somebody's nowhere near you, you're going to have people be near you within 10 seconds.
If
you know what
they
I mean?
Want to be. Yeah,
yeah, if they're just skiing in. That way.
Exactly.
Yeah, if you're looking, yes. You're like, I think we're good.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're just. Yeah. 20 seconds is all you have where you're good.
Yeah.
And then you have no idea who's coming over.
And then they've, you know, they're on you. Exactly. So there's
fuck,
that.
Yeah, that's disappointing.
That. Yeah, but you also then just have to dig deeper, right? You gotta commit further into the woods. You gotta walk higher. You know, they're there to make sure the parking lot doesn't.
Are there places that like, that they'll be like, okay, you guys, all you punks, you can go over there and do your fucking smoking?
Not to my knowledge. No, there's
so like the Back Bowls and Vale were like that. Where like, that's where everybody goes to smoke. Everybody knows about it, but nobody cares.
Okay. Well, that's, I don't know if we have that same sort of regionality. You know, we are RCMP or across the nation, right? So they're exactly the same detachments who are skiing in every resort that you'll be in. And they're just, you know, they're really, they're that friendly, family friendly horse guy. You know, they're just that, they're earnest and they're doing their job and keeping the public safe and they're snowboarding today. Hello, ma'am. And it's just, you know, their minds are in a different
All right.
Dimension.
So besides them, what do? You just run into the woods?
Mm.
Well, you guys are already off so far anyway.
Yeah, vape mostly, actually. Try and keep burning out of it, you know, and
make it's hard to light that lighter out there.
Yeah, yeah, and it can get a little bit soggy and wet, of course. Yeah, yeah, we've had many of those, you know, moments in the woods. But for me, it's more the riding after, you know, where you just like really can get into a rhythm, right? Because it's so, it's musical, right? It's like same as comedy and music. And once you start like getting into that kind of surfing, essentially, that's what I think, you know, if you have any experience with even standing, like I'm not a, you know, an amazing surfer, but I've stood on a board before, so I know that experience. And that's like when snowboarding is at its pinnacle, is when you feel weightless and you're just like, you can hear the little of the board, maybe that'll be in the background, yeah, but it's just like almost like you know, being light as a feather and floating.
It's
like,
meditative like too, flying.
Absolutely,
because you can't really think about, you have to look at where you're going,
yeah.
You know, you have to put your eyes there.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, you have to think a little ahead.
Yeah.
But then it's like you can't think about anything else. So you're just like, it clears you.
Total focus.
Yeah. So if you do that on weed, then it's just like, oh. And then every once in a while you'll stop like, well, that's beautiful scenery.
Yeah.
Let me stop for a second.
Unless there's a tragedy, and then being high is the worst thing, isn't it? It's so hilarious, isn't it? Being high is so fun, and then you break your ankle. Like,
yeah.
You know, like... I love it when you have those moments of like, oh God, now I really wish I had my faculties, you know?
Smoking on the lift is always a golden.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a pretty common one there. And, one that they'll of course get, really RC about, like, you know, that can,
really what?
RC about. Yeah. 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 Again, I hate to go into this dark place with it, Ari. I can't stop myself. It's so horrible of my own personality, but it just, I don't know why I think of the worst negatives of it. The other side of it, yeah. is that it's British Columbia, and everybody, of course, should go, because the majority of them, most people couldn't give a fuck at all.
Right.
And it's a really freeing place to actually smoke weed. And,
yeah.
you know, the term is safety meeting. I don't know.
Safety meeting. Yeah, they used to have those in Colorado.
Yeah.
All the staff. Like, amazing. We don't have safety
meetings.
We'll
go for safety meeting and then go and extrapolate all these ridiculous scenarios of how safe you've been and all the safe ideas that you want to implement later in the week and all that beautiful facetious high talk, right? Where you're all getting blazed. So that it's that also.
Yeah.
And that's what's so nice about it. But I also find, like, I had some ladies that were kind of, you know, chastising, I think, of, I tend to talk to strangers when I'm high.
Yeah.
And I quite enjoy doing so. And they kind of had that, ooh, somebody's had a little something for lunch kind of thing. And I thought, wow, that's how this place is. They're just that kind of conservative, like, yeah. they don't want to talk to me. And that's okay too, right? Like, I don't like to be in people's faces and offensive.
Dude, snowboarders are so much more social than skiers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a funny thing that. Yeah. And there are also another element of snowboarding is it's rebelliousness. So there's an element of, like, you know, you definitely gotta buy a snowboard and you pick up hitchhikers, you know, you gotta get into the whole thing. You gotta share the wealth a bit. It's, you know, it's about weed. It's about an example for me would be having a $700-$800 split board sent from Whistler, Canada, and have it arrive in the UK as like snowmobile parts or something for like 67p, like, rather than, you know, 300 quid of taxes and snowboard guys in a snowboard locker.
That's what you tell each other. Like,
they're just like, yeah, this is a bindings, $10, you know, pay 3.5p and get on your 1,000 quid board, right? Like, and that to me, that's snowboarding. It's like, it's not for the system, you know. And if you're listening to that and you think that the system suffers for that, then, you know, then die, because I don't agree with you.
Yeah,
like, you know, it's you got to get into the benevolence of, like, you know, sharing, and that's it's totally sappy and it's totally, you know, like,
yeah, somebody gave me a lighter last time I was there.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you have a lighter? He's like, yeah. He's like, keep it, man. I got another one back. Yeah. I'm about to go back.
It's a lifestyle.
Yeah,
and you know, skiing is a transportation mode, of course, you know, as well as a sport.
So. What is the war on skiers and snowboarders? What's going on there?
It's a funny one. It's especially, you know, it's really been eclipsed. If there's any, like, pinnacles of the competition throughout, where snowboard technology has most influenced skiing technology, probably, I think, maybe for the last, again, I don't like to speak out of turn in actual, like, technical things.
Just what you observed,
but in that, yeah, what I observe is about 5 years ago, it was pretty well known that the only advancements in ski technology had come from snowboard technology. So basically, they were starting to build two snowboards that you could then put your feet on as skis.
Oh, really? Yeah,
and that's why you get the fats and the wides and all that.
Are, like, great.
So they saw what a snowboard was doing, and then through that technology, why don't we put one of these on each feet? Fucking do it, man! And then, of course, you got your fatties going on. So.
I heard the same shit happens with the porn industry and the movie industry, where every advancement in camera work has been done by porn. By porn. And then Spielberg's like, oh, yeah, that's a good, yeah, I'll use that camera. You know? You're really capturing. I mean, I get you want to catch clits, but we can also capture people's emotions.
I could use 1 meter of waterproofness.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
6 feet. You know?
My thing is always when I ski into the woods to go smoke, then it's like I haven't really done the groundwork unless I've already been in that spot to be like, oh, fuck, now I got to ski out of here. And you can't get up.
Exactly.
You cannot get up because you're going two planks together.
Yeah.
And to go up, if you're going to climb, you're going to climb, you got to take them sideways.
Yeah.
And then there's no space for that, or you go find another path out, and there's some are none.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, that can be the most terrifying and the most embarrassing, I think, if there's any, like, if there's any level embarrassment in the backcountry, it's when you have to up climb. like if you've cliffed out, as it's referred to. And then you're just, I've only had to do it a couple of times, and it's a pretty intense process.
Everyone sees you too, right? What do you have to do?
No, nobody sees you, and you realize that you're a complete idiot, and if you die where you are, that the chances that anyone's going to find you that day are pretty fucking slim. Oh. Or, you know, not even that day, but like in time to help you. Like basically, and it always can certainly begin in this way, where you follow the wrong track.
Yeah.
So you're off-piste, and you can see, like, you know, groups going through a clearing, or, you know, one veers off, and you just, like, take that top turn, and then you realize that, oh, I can't actually join the group really quickly from here with the terrain I'm looking at, and then you commit to the next pitch. So, like, probably when you should have walked back there for the 25, 30 minutes.
You're like, oh, I'll catch up with them, I think, if I get around.
No, I'll get further down and then traverse over to them. And then as you get further down, you think, no, this is actually getting a tiny bit isolated now. I'm on a deeper face. And then when you finally get to what is, of course, the cliff face, and you notice that your turn is either, like, gone to traverse above you, like, you've just dropped below who you were following, and you realize you're that much deeper into the no-go or, like, you know, no-continue area. And then you start to realize that you're looking across at the tops of quite large trees, right? So you've, like, misread, as often happens in paddling also. It's a famous optical illusion in river tripping, where, like, if you're looking down a rapid, sometimes the river can connect in virtual world when, in fact, there's a waterfall in the way, right? Because you're kind of looking
at a
further body of water, and you won't see it. And similarly, snow can play tricks on you like
that. You thought it was a path, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's clear.
Oh, that's a clearing. That's just a whiteout, and I've engaged it with the further down snow because my eyes didn't focus far away. And you can have that. It happens famously in piloting as well, where if your eyes naturally relax, they will relax on a position, I believe, either 3 or 6 feet ahead of you. So if you're, like, looking at fog, you're not looking at, like, a meter in, or, you know, sorry, of 20 feet in a fog. You're looking at right at the front of the fog. So if there's anything beyond that, you're, like, not
going to
engage it at all. Yeah, it's not that. Yeah. So you have to be conscious of knowing to be looking at something, engage it. So, you know, similarly, if you are following down a snow face, and you follow that little track, and they've buggered off, and you've gone 5 feet past them, and it starts to kind of do a rollover steep, and you think, okay, I'm going in, how steep is this going to get? And you're kind of not hitting a cliff face, essentially. And then you just start to see that, like, as you're looking down at, you know, maybe 10, 15 degrees, you've got the tops of really big
trees.
And
you're like, fuck, that's 40 feet.
Fuck. And then you have the moment, like, these are where I'm telling you, where you get into the, you know, self-assessment, where your first thought is like, pull a Rambo, right? Like, clear the gap and hug the top of the tree and, like, down climb a, you know, like, do a dynamic move, essentially save yourself. Because the idea of, like, climbing up, you know, or traversing where you are, also, like, you get that little just wink in your arsehole where you think, oh, wow, I'm actually relying on the snow I'm sitting on now to not overpour this already.
Oh, right. If it drops down, it's just
going to launch you. Yeah, if this drops, like, and I'm not on rock. So you realize the kind of precariousness of the face you're on, and, you know, it makes a couple of squeaking noises, and then you're trying to picture how you're going to move laterally, and you don't have any pitch to do so. And then you're, like, kind of, you know, getting down to try and see if you can unbuckle, and where you're going to go to then get your snowboard, where you're both going to be stable, and then how you're going to spin on the face.
You can't let go of your snowboard there. You're fucked.
Let go of your snowboard there. You're very deeply fucked at that point. So you've only got that as a tool. And now you've come into the back end of your bindings, and you're holding, like, kind of pushing your mittens through the frame of the binding to have a pull-up bar. And you're, like, chopping into the snow.
With on your hands?
And then boot kicking in to make steps, and then working up like a ladder, you know, like moving your way up and along a face. And this mine luckily got to a place where I could then, you know, strap in. And there's places sometimes where you realize I can make a couple of turns here or three turns here.
And then
it cliffs out again and I got to get off again. But is it worth, like, tying in there at that perch? Or is it worth just, like, you know, tumbling down? And then you have to get into the, like, kind of philosophy of, no, you ride where you can, right? If you can ride it, right? Like, we always had a saying in kayaking, die in the boat. Was a real ubiquitous thing.
Really?
Like, as far as, you know, using your technology went, like, if it's bad enough that it's overwhelmed you and your interface with your technology, you don't want to swim it.
Right. You know? Right. Like, that's the worst
you've
thing.
You've lost your tools. Yeah. Like, yeah, die in that boat. Like, that's what you need to get out of there.
At least you're on a board.
Yeah.
You got a chance when you're on a board.
I was like, you can spear a fish or something. Yeah. Like, yeah. So similarly, you know, I don't know how that equates to snowboarding, but other than, you know, you're looking at it as a quotient of being worn out, because I'm sure yourself, you know, that if you've ever crawled through 30 feet of deep snow, it's just like, you know, astronaut training, right?
You're it's like, almost like you unzip everything and take off your hat. Just like, fuck it, yeah. I'm so hot now.
Yeah, I'm dying.
And then you got to ski after that, and or board after that, and it's like, I'm worn out. My legs aren't going to react.
Can I interrupt you before? Ari, it's outrageous. One of those kind of incidents is in Revelstoke Mountain in Canada with Mr.
Revelstoke. I looked at that place too.
Beautiful, yeah. And and we were in these kind of conditions, and at a point where you're surfing on your tummy to try and cross powder fields, like meadows that are just deep snow, and you've got the snowboard like kind of in a ski track ahead of you, so the skiers are kind of breaking the trail, and you're like porpoise swimming, like with the snowboard on your chest, and you're like doing like breaststroke to try and clear bits of regions of deep powder snow, like that's how difficult it is to move in it. And it's like quicksand, right? Like you're just being enveloped by it every time you put your hand in, and you know, you're kind of
you put your chest on your board,
steps forward, two steps back kind of thing. Yeah, so you're like, you know, doing like a surfboard move, right?
Wow.
Yeah, to get down a gradual decline or whatever, somewhere where you know if you're gonna have to be face first and swimming anyway, it's best to have the board there at, you know, but it's where it'll get most advantage sort of in that move, right? And in one of those things, I'm like bellying along, and I don't recall. I think I saw it like kind of facing me or flat out, but I don't think it was like my hand went into deep snow. But regardless, it fucking happened that I like got a hold of Arj Barker's fucking iPhone.
Like, what?
Yeah, it was just like he was, you know, another 20 feet ahead of me, kind of digging through the snow, and there were maybe like six or eight guys ahead of him.
What?
Yeah, he dropped his iPhone? And I was just like, is this your iPhone?
You found it in the snow?
I can't be quoted on it, but I'm quite sure, Ari, I'm quite sure it's white. Really, honestly.
Wow.
Like, I think I saw like the silver glint, like the little magpie deep inside me was just like, oh, Jesus, that's somebody's phone. And I go, that's my phone. And then we, for like years, were working on the idea of having like an idiot string snow like iPhone attachment, you know, you can imagine Arj's mind working it. Like, so we've had all these incarnations of, you know, things that would best do that. But
that's hilarious.
That
someone was going to find that in like July if you didn't find it.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. At the top of the mountain. How classic, huh?
Yeah. You ever take mushrooms and go out there?
I can't recall taking shroomies and snowboarding. I don't have... Because snowboarding, unfortunately with snowboarding, it tends to begin and end with a truck drive. So, you know, Canada snowboarding's pretty functional, and I wouldn't like invest in driving on shrooms as I would, you know, like being baked as...
So with the truck drive, what do you mean? Why? Because there's nowhere near any place to stay?
Because you're on icy, windy mountain roads. And and you've got half an hour long, sometimes 2 hour drive to get back to a hotel or civilization.
Yeah.
Some of them are really, you know, awesomely isolated.
And that's cool. Like,
yeah, really cool. Yeah. So you're feeling the conditions as you're getting closer. But I don't think mushrooms are going to be like exactly, usually.
My friend told me he just took like a cap or a cap and a stem and just gets it. And he said it's just like amazing.
I'll bet. Well, mushrooms doing anything should be as beautiful as mushrooms themselves, shouldn't they? You know?
I mean, I wouldn't want to take the SATs on mushrooms, but like.
you can imagine only, or maybe you will now, how ignorant I am that I can't even dream of what SATs are.
Oh, yeah. It's an America thing. I realized when I said it.
I know, but I'm ignorant of that.
Scholastic aptitude test.
You're making a comparison of how your ignorance within your SATs would be a statement, and I don't even know what the fuck SATs you're talking about. I'm not external.
What is that? Yeah, what does that work? What does that
letters? You guys get brainwashed. I know how it works. You got your Common Core stuff. You follow what the Prussians are doing, and you're
getting into college scores.
I get it.
You get into uni scores.
Yeah.
You know, you get your grades and you get your SAT scores. It's like, I don't know how smart you are. Understand, whatever, I don't care. That was when you were 17, everybody cared then.
Is it like a competency across all subjects?
Yeah, you get math and English, reading comprehension.
Yeah.
It's a better sign of how you'll perform in college than just your grades.
Wow.
Yeah. how much math understand. It's just like almost like IQ mixed with. And then for a while they said that the tests were racist.
Wow.
I don't know how exactly, but somebody was saying that.
Oh my, presumptuous. I had that actually. I don't know what you'll think of this, but it'd be good to have it in the airwaves just for it to be discussed. I was asked in recently in an operation in the UK. I had my hip operated on for a little arthritis. So that's also that ties wickedly into
I was going to get a C-section, but that's great.
That's right. Yeah. And they asked me my race on the way into the hospital, and I took minor offense to it, and I just said I just can't believe in this day and age that you like could possibly even enter that subject.
Why do they ask
just,
that? Like,
it's so irrelevant. And then a lady behind the lady who had asked me sort of interjected with just put down no answer, like kind of terse, and then I realized it's like a bone of contention for them, and I was just really kind of off put by it. And didn't like, but at the same time, didn't want to badger them about it because I also know it's not their thing at all. Yeah. So I kind of avoided it until I went up to talk with a surgeon and asked him. And I just said, medically, sir, can you tell me, not wish to offend or, create a disturbance, but they've just asked me my race. And would that ever come into like a factoring of anything you do professionally? And he just frankly just said, no, I can't possibly imagine why that would ever be asked. And we just had this little wild moment in a hospital in England, and wowee, yeah, and it wasn't like, it wasn't corrosive or conspiratorial or anything. It was just like a little.
That's what I've always done.
Look up and to the left, and have a little thought.
Yeah, I always put other because I'm more like I'm more Jewish than white. So I'm like, but they don't really have that. So
other,
yeah,
all right, yeah.
Other's a box, but it is weird. Like, why do they ask that
why
at
do you
all?
Care? Yeah, what are you going to send me? A different card at a different time of year?
I would think maybe right. Maybe there's like, for certain types of race, we got to test for certain things that are more prevalent. But if the doctor's like, no, then it's like, oh.
Yeah, you'd think that just putting sickle cell anemia as a question mark on the page would be enough, rather than that being the determining factor, those there certainly are through lines of racial. Now it gets awkward and uncomfortable. Doesn't it? Yes. Okay. So sorry if you're actually categorizing ailments, then there are certainly races
sickle
that are
cell.
Predominant to have.
What is it? What do the Jews get?
Threats.
Tay-Sachs.
What?
Tay-Sachs is a Jew disease.
No, stop it. What is it? I've never heard of it.
I don't know. It fucks you up, and I think you die by the time you're like 12 or something. But
no way.
Yeah, and so they have to tell when you get married to another Jewish person, they test you to see if you're both carriers.
No way.
Yeah, because if you're both carriers, then it's like I think a 1 in 4 chance your children will have it and will
and
die
it's
horribly.
Fatal.
At, yeah.
Oh my good God.
Yeah, so if one's a carrier, one's not, you're totally okay.
I'd never in my life heard that.
Yeah.
How brutal.
Yeah.
Do you know of the, it's always wildly interesting to me, we were talking about it a couple of nights ago, just because a fella had a Viking, some sort of Viking ailment.
Yeah.
Some sort of, oddly, Northern European thing going on. And then we got on to talking about the uniqueness of certain parts of Scandinavia being invulnerable to the AIDS virus.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if you'd heard of that, but they first noticed a pattern of like highly vulnerable people, drug users, prostitutes, who weren't meeting the same attrition rates
of
the death rates in that that category of
and it was Nordic
humanity.
People.
Yeah, and they think that I think the last time I read about it, it was still being debated as to whether or not it had anything to do with the bubonic plague or the Black Plague's influence in that area of who it wiped out. But I actually there's a bit of my brain now that's countering that I think they also might have ruled that out. But regardless, there's a bit of them. I'm not sure if it's chromosome or chromosome. I'm not sure how to say chromosome.
Chromosome.
But there's like an element of the process that their body just doesn't possess.
Yeah.
That's like latent.
Yeah.
Like something in their code that they don't carry.
And so they just
wouldn't
can't
do
get
anything
AIDS.
If it was there anyway. And AIDS doesn't like fit the key into that lock. So they just like are impervious to it. And it's a like 10-12% kind of category thing.
Whoa.
It's quite incredible, right? especially when you get into AIDS being believed begun by a Norwegian, which is in its own
That's what
way.
They say?
Yeah, yeah, which is...
Wasn't the thing they said, African fucking a monkey?
Of course, yeah, yeah. Well, once you get into toppling AIDS conspiracies or not, you're into a pretty precarious...
Do you know what they used to call it?
What's that?
At the beginning, GRIDS?
No, is that... Why is that?
Gay-related immune deficiency syndrome.
Wow. Wow. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, for the first couple of years. Before it hit big. Once it hit big, it was already AIDS.
Wild.
GRIDS.
Okay.
They're like, man, it's just gay people getting it.
Wild. Wow. Well, I do like the sort of, you know, the stories of different threads of it, but I'm certainly not like a master on the subject because it's, for me, I just kind of pick the funny ones, which I find interesting that like a Norwegian sailor who was seeing prostitutes in West Africa was, took back, if you believe this official theory of AIDS, took that back to Scandinavia and even more oddly didn't pass it on to all of his kids, which is very interesting. So, like, I believe at least one of them was born with AIDS, and I think one of them wasn't but contracted it, and I think the other one wasn't born with it or contracted it, which is unreal, right? So this guy goes back, infects his Norwegian wife. They die, like, kind of, you know, as you'd imagine, quite horribly and mysteriously. But the Norwegians, of course, like, grab their organs and put them on their shelf and, you know, number them and keep an eye on them. And then, of course, the AIDS epidemic kicks in, and they're just, like, cross-referencing. Oh, there you go.
Started AIDS, we got AIDS.
And yeah, we had AIDS a long fucking time ago.
That's just like America. That's just like America. Yeah. When Columbus went, and Nordic were like, no, we've been there, man.
Of course, we had AIDS way before that. What are you talking about? Shit. Cutting our grass. Yeah, so I, you know, for me, it's not as to pursue the comprehensive subject matter.
Oh, yeah. Andrew Maxwell told me that people with sickle cell are...
Say again?
Andrew Maxwell?
Yeah.
He said that people with sickle cell...
Yeah.
No mosquito bites.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Like it developed as a way to stop, you know, your natural body's way to stop mosquito bites because you weren't living that long anyway. Wow. Sickle cell hit you later in life. And they were like, we won't need later in life.
You know,
there is
there.
No 55. Yeah. So let's get this stuff now. We'll get immune. Out. Yeah, we'll get immune to these diseases through mosquitoes.
Like an escaped ape might do if it had access to the lab.
Yeah.
I love alien shit.
Wait, there was something else I was gonna say for snowboarding.
Oh yeah, good. Come on.
Oh yeah, we never got to that. What's the war between the snowboarders and the skiers?
There's a lot of conflict there. It's
funny start thing. Is counterculture, sure, but like,
and it's also so not there.
It's not there.
So much of it is it's totally there. And it's totally not there at the same time, you know, in circumstance, right? It's as random as rain.
Yeah.
You know, you can run into just really sound human beings as you could possibly imagine who are just on the side of a fucking mountain just like you.
Hey, I want to jump too,
and
man.
My goodness, I'm only here for the airtime, man. Yeah. And I like live vicariously through a lot of people that way. I'm very lucky in my life that family members particularly, I've got some like, you know, ski bum in my family.
Yeah.
And I get to go and spend like family time with people who can just like, you know, ride the treetops. And, and of course, the virtue in my life is that I get to be able to go to these resorts and perform and have the, you know, the experience of being there as regularly as I do to then, you know, send invites out to them, right? Like they know we're in the country for 5 weeks. We're going to be in these places. If it gets a hit, if the conditions are right, you know, if we get a dump, if the rain farmers do the right dance and we get
come
that meter
out
that we're calling for and it sits on top of the already well-established base that isn't avi unfriendly and we're going to dial in some cat tickets. So come and join us. And, you know, the whole four beds in a room, Canada style sinks that are the size of a bed just in case you catch a trout that big, you know, like these little like mountain towns. And you get in one of those snow tanks and it's just like, you know, as pristine as helicopter, but a third of the price.
Yeah.
And you and 10 of your buddies eating sandwiches all day, smoking Julios, going Huli, and just like riding pristine conditions with people who are like so casual, like just utterly capable. They're in skis, the guides, they've got all the equipment.
Oh, really?
You've got avi gear. The whole day begins with the avalanche course, and then you get up to the first bit and they just tell you what the run is and they tell you what some nice obstacles are on it and where some hits are if people like getting good hits, and then tell you not to go past the left side of their track. Put the other guy, their like tail gunner guy, who's going to follow up, like the sweep. He's going to
wait. Go, don't go past the left side.
Yeah,
of
don't ski left of my track. Would be
so only right, or
yeah, just stay right of my track. Don't go, you know, if you run into a track, stay to the right of it. You know, don't go left of my track. Yeah, so they're basically setting the cut line because there could be obstacles there that like drop you into a very different scenario. Because
so he's like, I'm going to the edge.
It's raw. Yeah, that's going as far as you can go.
My line is the edge.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Yeah, okay. I'm going to set the perimeter on this thing, and anything else you can like within reason hit at a pretty good speed, but don't carry too much speed left.
right. Yeah.
So, and then you know, sometimes the other guide will go right, and then you just make decisions on who's got golfing, right? You know, who's going to go first the next time.
Yeah, maybe the war's gone away then. Maybe it has. I remember when I started, it was like, I remember snowboarding. When did it start? 80s, 90s?
I thought it was late 70s or late something 70s. Like that. I thought, yeah. I watched the whole like documentary genesis of it and the fight between Burton and all that stuff. But like it, to me, it just gets into the politics of it and it so doesn't matter because that's the, you know, it's the greatest thing about it is that it's for everyone, you know? It's like...
Yeah,
that's why. And for me, that's
I remember coming in where I remember not having any concept of snowboarders. When my dad would take me skiing and stuff, and then all of a sudden, like when I was in college, I started seeing it more.
Yeah,
I was like, oh yeah, they're starting to be around.
Yeah,
I still like to joke. I'm like, whenever people are like, do you snowboard? I'm like, no, because I'm not a punk. I'm not a young punk with no respect for his elders.
I think there is that little element of it, but you know, you also when you see people that are just so gifted on them, that and especially when they're wearing like a patroller jacket or you know carrying emergency equipment, and you just realize, oh my goodness, these people are like mountain surfers, and they just
you guys all get your backpacks.
Yeah,
we don't get backpacks.
Yeah, shovels, the whole thing, like. I've you know boarded with a shovel my whole life.
So really?
Yeah. That, what, those are funny moments I can tell you, Ari. That's like I had at Whistler. You know, being an Alberta guy and talking about 40 below earlier. This was a big one for me. That there were like all the ski patrol people in Vancouver because it had gone down to like minus 17, and I think it actually hit like minus 23 or something past that. Quite cold for a coastal mountain, and you know people getting red noses and stuff, and they were. They were telling people to go in. It's too chilly to be out, and like actual officially policing the mountain. And I was just sitting there with like extra wool pants, a down vest, you know, extra rope, couple of headlamps, you know, food for 2 days, like just that kind of.
If I gotta be here, I gotta be here.
You know, is telling me to be careful, and I just had a little kind of smile. It's like, don't, yes, ma'am, I will, of course, and remember to, you know, let me know if anyone needs any help, also, because we're all here for each other, you know, and that for me, the little Canadian way, right?
Like, yeah,
that's the backcountry. That's what I like about it.
Dude, we had a guy, a snowboarder that I was trying to keep up with.
Oh yeah,
I like you guys just getting speed and just taking like on path.
Yeah,
just like let's fucking leap off this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really do that. That seems fun.
That's a
huh?
cool element of it. Yeah, I like that element of it. I like a bit of going really fucking fast.
Yeah,
that's one of my little fortes, and that's something that like
really.
Yeah, I find that you're more limited, or I find I'm more limited by eyesight than skill, or certainly conditions. Like on a bright day, the difference between hauling ass and on an apprehensive day with flat light is like off the charts. Basically, I consider myself a good driver. Right, so once I get like the cut of the board, I can, depending on the conditions, really commit to like opening it up in pretty choppy bits, right? Like where you know I can clear that, I can, you know, in these conditions I can land stuff, and it's just like wah, and I love that stuff. That's that's why I like, and I push people to like do it all, ride the crap, go the hardest way. It's the most fun for sure. If there's like icy pimples beside like a pisted run, go into the icy pimples for a bit. See what it's like to be in like a, you know.
At least see it. I get that too.
Yeah.
Where it's like, let's say, oh, no one's going that way. Let's only going left. Let's try to go right if no one's going right. And then you get there like, oh, I see why no one's going here.
Totally.
It's too icy. But at least you tried it.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes you find that's a bit that you have to commit to getting through.
Yeah.
And then you find stuff that they didn't find, right? So it becomes that like, you know, how much work do you want to do?
Yeah. And you got to commit. Once you're 5 feet down, you're too far down.
Yeah,
so it's like, we're going this way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly as I was saying before about the about walking uphill using the board.
Damn, that's steep.
Yeah, and you also know you're making a cut line as you're doing it, you know, to weaken the snow layer. So you're moving laterally on a face while you're cutting into it with the board sideways, right? So it's essentially just like, you know, fracturing. I don't know if you've ever... I've only been in, as a major event in my life, I've only been in one avalanche, Ari.
Yeah.
Really something in France. That's another, like, feeling that is a thing. I've been in an avalanche, yeah. And that was like, and it wasn't huge, and it didn't take out a village, because if you get into, like, the size of avalanche potentials, they're just so off the charts Armageddon-like. But I was in one that, like, I realized the entire face I was on was moving with me like a river. And about as deep as a river, like the bit that I was surfing on that then went kind of molten, like kind of shaky, like a beaker of boiling water. You see it sort of like change form, right, as it all becomes like a mass that's now behaving as ball bearings, right? And then you just kind of realize that you're still surfing, like snowboarding, but you're deeper down than you were because the wind is now at your back, so you don't have the lift. And you're also... having it go through your legs like you're walking across a stream, right? So it's like getting past you and accelerating through you, but you also realize you're still getting feedback from your board and you're still surfing, but you're deeper down.
Yeah,
and then just that kind of like, you know, I don't have the potential to commit to like outrunning it because I'm way too far up it. Like I was in the kind of three-quarter bit of it.
What do you mean with three-quarters back?
I was back the three-quarter bit, yeah, so it like was majority in front of me.
Oh.
And where it had fractured behind me wasn't as deep a well, you know, as deep a reservoir to feed it. So almost immediately I would have like clocked that it wasn't becoming more intense faster, and then just got into the kind of like thinking if I was in a river, how I would, you know, river out or how I would surf it out, and just kind of like side moved, but in a way of like escaping, you know, like a ferry angle. And then it cleared, you know, through, and it was just one of those, like, just, again, like, I tell you this from the point of view that, you know, anybody who has a cursory glance into avalanches can realize that they're just, like, off the charts, biblical, in terms of size and taking out villages.
How frightened were you during, like, once you realized, oh, that's what I'm on?
No, that's what the horror was of it, that you get the, you know, the initial fright, because you realize, like, the circumstance that you could be in, but then the immediate feedback that you're getting from it tells you that there's, like, life potential in it. Right? Like that moment of just thinking, okay, just keep a ferry angle, like stay steady. Don't wipe out. Don't get buried by it for sure.
Yeah.
And that was like, that's so massive in terms of like me accomplishing, you know, not being further hurt by it. And then there was another moment of it. Sorry, I'm not trying to, and by the way, I really have to come from a point of view of not trying to make it more exciting, because I don't, I don't want to like, you know, over egg, like, the snowboarding, avalanche and stuff. But what were more unique elements of it were that people skied down like quite quickly and were able to like come and assess if you were all right. And oh my God, that was it. This is the tension of it. This is what was so intense, that I knew my buddy Dan Quinn was below me and I didn't know how he had fared.
Oh shit.
And it was really intense. It was a really weird, and that was the day I tomahawked. You know, we'd been boarding together all day and it was really like, you know, we're well off.
You tomahawked before that or after that?
I don't know if it was before or after, Ari, but I think we would have come in after the avalanche. A bit of me feels
at that
like
point, it's the like, avalanche, all right, they warned us twice.
You can tomahawk. In fact, I think I did tomahawk more than once that day. But like, you know, the avalanche was kind of like, all right, it wouldn't feel like a soda.
Yeah. Hot chocolate's good, man.
But I had that wonderful like release where once I kind of got myself back up and was riding through the debris.
Yeah.
And had interacted with people who had come skied down and say, hey, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, but my buddy might not be. And I don't recall if they went
Quinn?
On.
Yeah,
but yeah, just people who were really solid, backcountry solid, you know, journeyman skiers who just like, you know, were the arms and legs of the event, you know. And then we got further down and Dan was okay.
Oh.
The tension. But it was horrible. Like, you know, for 45 seconds, a minute, you're just like waiting for your buddy to ski out in the trees, right? You just want to see them like far enough down and expose themselves to see the jacket. Yeah, they're just like, and the fucking like, I don't have enough equipment. What are we doing? We're idiots. Does he have a transceiver? Do we put them on today? You know, like all the things that are just like, you're an idiot. You are an idiot. What are you guys doing? I don't know. You you know, I think we had helmets on back then.
But you get like, transceivers so you can radio each other?
Of course. No, so you can find the body, right? When you're buried in the snow. So you can. So their beacon will always be sending, and you, you know, would have to put on receive mode and go walk the last place
to each other
seen to try and find where they're like upside down. And I've seen, you know, there's beautiful ones on the internet. I say beautiful because they're just like miracle stories where you see a guy wipe out, buried in an avalanche, where people know where it happened. Where there's guys all over it. There's dudes on the same chute right above. They call it when it happens. They're like, he's, you know, like immediately he's sliding and they're like, he's in one. And they're after him. And still with the helmet cam footage, probably a minute and a half, a minute, 45 seconds where you can hear the breathing. And then you see the like the depth of snow change where it becomes, you know, lighter and lighter. Where they're coming. And then you know, the sun shines through like a cartoon. Wow. Like I'm not, yeah, it's like, you know, Disney stuff. And dude, like that's like a minute and a half for sure.
And you
right?
don't
like,
know if anyone's coming for you or when.
I don't know, of course. But crazier than that is that like that's the best that can happen if everyone's all the fuck over it, right? The chances that if you like last saw his jacket 200 feet down where that tree is and you don't know at all where he is now, you're just like one guy with another transceiver is just utter like body recovery, right? Body retrieval. And that's like, that's the horror of it because the odds are just like such a big place with such unanimous, you know, uniform conditions and the depth of the potential depth of it is bananas. They could be 10 feet deep and
there's some, further up or further back. You have no idea, right? How far they got wind underwater.
Often happens. You most often die of trauma. Blunt force trauma is the greater. Yeah, getting plowed into stuff, right? Like you're being accelerated with the snow mass and then just get driven into like a log on its side with, you know, branches sticking out, like, you know, impaled essentially. That's where a lot of people, and don't forget, some of those logs are coming for the ride, right, Ari? That's where you get into the insanity of it. Like a tsunami type perspective proportion. Like, oh, I got, you know, smacked by a tree that was also avalanching with me that day. Like that's, you know, that's where it gets right off the charts crazy and you just start to realize, oh my goodness, right, it's rockfall, it's mountains, it's, you know, it's a seismic event and you're snowboarding and you're high. So yeah. What a pleasure talking to you, Ari.
You too, buddy.
You relax the shit out of me in a really nice way. And I try and catch myself because I'm motor mouth, of course.
No, it's all right. I like letting you go, especially when I get high. Then it's like, I just get entertained by listening to you.
I really appreciate it. And, you know, there's so many things that I don't know. And I don't like to talk in expert topics and whatnot. But my, you know, when I'm telling you kind of the stories and my experiences of that stuff, I try not to be...
My feeling is an expert is just someone who's been through it a few times.
Yeah.
So like...
Yeah, it's in the
I didn't take
instinct.
Class on comedy, but I'm an expert on it, you know? Yeah. Or like my street that I live on, I'm an expert on that without, you know...
Yeah, it's intuitive.
Not knowing all the shit, yeah.
Yeah, so it's really a pleasure to talk to you. And I have to say as well, when I'm this high, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Thanks, buddy. Thanks for you. That's enough work for today, I think.
Yeah, I think so, for sure.
Go do a comedy show now.
Yeah, I'm going to shower. How can people find you? You're the best, man. You're the best. I'm so glad. I was like, wait, is Craig Campbell here? I had to look through. That was the only thing I cracked the fringe book for.
I think I heard something.
Yeah.
Who's that guy yelling at a post?
Where can people good find job, you online man. And shit?
Moosefucker.com.
Yeah, of course.
At Moosefucker on Twitter if you want to stay in touch. I try to be, you know, as on it as possible. I like to interact with people and
yeah.
I like that social media world. I really
people
like
loved you on here last time.
I really felt that.
You're so it was really good, nice fun
to,
stories.
To get people from so many unique places in the world to just, you know, drop a line and say they enjoyed it. And you can only imagine how much that encouraged me to be here now, you know, just because, not just for yourself, because I, you know, like mentioned before the interview, but before when I realized, oh, you like relaxing and long form, which I, you know, there's no stress with you. And then I started to, of course, knock on and realize, oh, why wouldn't the people that enjoy Ari also be those people? Of course they are.
I've only attracted the people who are like cool with that, I guess.
Yeah, it's a really, I don't say it to people very often, but you're somebody who attracts a really fucking awesome audience, you know, when you meet the Schiffer fans.
Yeah, like, I'm pretty lucky about that.
All right, 420.
Yeah, exactly.
Well done.
Like, I heard you on this. You want to smoke? I'm like, oh, thanks, man. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, that's an important, what a great thing to carry.
Yeah. Or they go see comedy shows, too. They go see people, like, guests and shit. Yeah, that's pretty rad. I've heard people get bad audiences through no fault of their own. I'm pretty lucky.
Yeah, I wonder. You don't even want to give fault to push that agenda. Just like maybe they do. I don't know. Like, I just hate to be in an environment where people weren't already having kind of a nice time, right?
And it is a comedy show.
Yeah, it's not curative. Right? Yeah. I was trying to just infect you with what I'm already carrying, but.
Yeah, you're the best, man.
Pleasure. Likewise. I don't think there's anything else official. I don't think from my end.
You got any dates coming in the winter people should know
about?
I'm
in Norway for a bit, and Liverpool at a comedy festival coming up, and then on the 7th of December, I have one of those little where the vagina gets like the size of a football, and the head flies at you.
Yeah,
just,
man,
puke and shit on yourself.
Nervous for you.
Are you?
Congratulations! Wow, that shit fucking makes me overwhelmed.
Yeah,
with the
of
idea.
Course, I'll bet. Yeah, you grab for your chest when you speak, and I see that because it's the universe talking, right? It's like for me, it's a total, it's a departure from anything I know. So. I'm terrified and excited at the same time. What can happen other than I look forward to speaking to you in a year?
Yeah. Boy or girl, do you know?
Don't know. Don't want to know.
Yeah,
don't
fuck
know.
It. Fuck it. You'll know eventually.
Yeah. Yeah.
You'll know eventually.
Yeah, it's a fun little game to play. And I like the idea that we're just in the woods somewhere and, like nature's taking its course. I don't want any forewarding information.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, buddy.
Pleasure, buddy. Nice talking to you again.
Yeah,
you too. See you.
Yeah. Okay, I gotta go board my flight. I'm gonna upload this and equalize it all. I already got the music. I'm gonna equalize all of it on the plane, and then as soon as I land, I'll be able to upload it. Let's say I have Wi-Fi on the plane, but I doubt it. I took an edible. We're gonna take another one. I took whatever's left over of one. I'm gonna take another one. I'm gonna have a great time staring out the window. Got a window seat. Thank you. EdenSkewer.com for this edible, wherever it came from. Probably thank you for the guy who gave it to me, but whoever EdenSkewer is. I realize I shouldn't do this on the air. I'll wait until I'm done. So that's the episode, you guys. That's the episode. I'm done with my special. It came out great. I'm finished editing. I'm still looking for the art. I need an animator to make some cool art. I have this thing in mind. But it takes a slight amount of animation. That's what I want in the beginning. All the people who submitted stuff for music, I haven't gone through it all yet. I've been so busy editing. I'll go through it all. So hopefully I'll find something from one of the fans. By the way, I wanted to point this out, but I think I'll save it for next week. Yeah, I'll save it for next week. It's about fans of comedy in general. Yeah, I'll save it. But the special came out great. To my liking. There's one edit in there that I'm like, fuck, this looks like an edit. But one. And it's more worth it for me to do that, have one sloppy thing, than to have crowd shots. I hate crowd shots. I watch a bunch of specials on Netflix, and a lot of them look terrible. Really. Michael Che's looked really good. Just the look of it. I'm not even talking about the performance. And then there's one I saw that was like so beyond terrible that I had to text a bunch of my friends. I'm like, did you see this person special? It was so crazy, out of the box bad. Like, oh, I can't even get into it. I can't even get into it. I can't even get into it. I mean, it's offensive as anyone who does stand-up comedy. Not how bad, but the way they did the technique they used in the shooting. It was just like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Do you not care about stand-up at all? Are you just a businessman? That'd be a good name for a Jewish superhero, businessman. All right, you guys, let's start the episode. Thank you, Craig Campbell, for coming. Congratulations on your kid. I haven't written you yet. I got better write you. Say congratulations. Yeah, I hope you're doing well, man. You're one of the coolest people I know. Yeah. Anyway, you guys, that's the episode. Don't forget to set your DVRs if you have them. For This Not Happening, check it out on the app. Tell some people. We've got 3 or 4 weeks left. Greg Fitzsimmons is coming up. Joey Diaz is coming up. Steve Simone is coming up. I got another one coming up. I got my Christmas story coming up, I think. I don't know who else. Some good ones. Some good ones. Did you guys see Sean Flannery last week? God, that was a great story. And Bert's story about Anne Frank's house. All right, I also have a story about Anne Frank's house, by the way, in my special. So don't think I stole it. All right, you guys, that's it. Thank you very much. Okay, let's see if I can get this right. Ladies and gentlemen, for Craig Campbell, this has been Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, episode 286, Shredding the Gnar. Damn it. Somebody told me how to do it. Now I fucking forgot. I saved it my favorites on Twitter. Let's see here. I knew it. I had it. I fucking had it. For... Thank you very much. Tweets aren't... No, of course they're loading. Okay, here we go. Okay, let's find it. It's nice to see it now. You guys gonna check out Ren Azizi's new podcast, by the way? Hear Me This Book? I'm the first guest. Hopefully it's up by now. Thanks. Okay, this has been Ari Shaffir. No. Okay, this has been Ari Shaffir's... Okay, here, Matt Reich on Twitter. This has been Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, episode 286, Shredding the Gnar. For Craig Campbell, I'm Ari Shaffir, saying so long. Fuck yes, that's it.
Now the life is full of wonder, but his heart still knows some fear of a simple thing he cannot comprehend. Why they try to tear the mountains down to bring in a couple more. More people, more scars upon the land. And the Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've seen it rain and fire in the sky. I know he'd be a poor man if he never saw an eagle fly. Rocky Mountain High, it's a Colorado Rocky Mountain High. I've seen it rain and fire in the sky. Friends around a campfire, everybody's high. Rocky Mountain High, Rocky Mountain High, Rocky Mountain High.